trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing how you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Yeah,
something to
absolutely,
you?
Because I can't
something
prove
either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Good evening, citizens of Netlandia. Welcome to our Really Radio Show 95 for Friday, February 5th, 2016, where we dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversations that make you go, oh, really? I'm your host, Andy Cowan, and tonight we're going to have, David O'Connor, Michael Robinson, Fred Sims, Stephen Griffith, and Ren Cowan. We're going to have everybody. Well, everybody from last week. How about that?
What up?
But this time.
Hello.
But at least this time.
More alcohol.
We have, wait a second. It does not seem to be making the video live. Why for?
This is the same problem we had last week.
Yeah, we seem to be continuing to have some technical difficulties with our streaming partner here, YouTube.
It says it's live.
It does say it's live. And last time, just to had insult to injury, I suppose. It did record, and then it dropped it on YouTube. So everything that we're doing now will work, but we seem to have this other little problem. So let me see here if I can, unfortunately, take up a little bit of time to try and get the video feed out to our beloved listener out there in the chat. Hello, Kate. Thank you very much for joining us, even though things are broke sauce. Let me see if I can get you.
So, you know, business as usual.
Business as usual, indeed.
So let me go ahead and use this time while Andy's working.
Do that.
We have a beloved listener, and that beloved listener has earned herself one free poster. Now, you other listeners who heard me say last week that I have six Your Logical Fallacy Is posters to give out, none of you sent me emails. I want those emails. I want you to interact. Send them to me. Send them to me about how you dislike what I'm saying. Send them to me about how much you love Michael. Send them to me about the cat. Send them to me about how Andy always has problems with something on the show. Anything. Send them to me. Let's get them going. Give me your information. I will get you a free poster, people. I know it's just a poster, but it's kind of friggin' cool. I like the one that's on Andy's wall. I read that whole thing the first time I was ever in his house. It's amazing. You can have one. I will get you one. I promise. I have five more to give out. Be one of those five. It's super exclusive.
Super is super. It is super exclusive. It's true. It truly is. Now, why is it? Okay. I'm trying here, folks. I'm trying. And
I didn't use enough time.
They're not. Well, no, it's just that it's not easy. This whole thing is not very easy, and it's really actually annoying. Super annoying. I am actually doing another stream, but then it's a matter of finding where that link goes to. You'd think that it would be, oh, hi, it's right there, but no. Is it right on this one? No, it's not on this one either. So it's like, where is it? My channel. That's not my channel. Because I'm on the wrong account. That's the other thing. When you have so many Google accounts, trying to actually figure out where everything goes is kind of a problem.
Well, whose fault is that?
I think that it'd probably be the Google engineers. But, you know, we've wasted enough time here that David has joined us.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God, he's here.
See, there was a point to all that. It wasn't because the show's broken. He just wanted to waste time until David got here.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
Total
smoke
screen.
Absolutely. Total smoke screen.
You didn't see anything.
That's right. No, none of this has ever happened. I don't know what you're talking about at all.
Or Really Radio Show 95, and David's here. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we hadn't even gotten that far yet.
Have we not gotten that far?
No.
Well,
we haven't.
As we had problems last week with doing the feed, it's still not working. I don't understand what it is. So, unfortunately...
Oh, yeah. It says this live event will begin in a few moments.
Yeah, but it's... I'm streaming in two locations right now, and it's still not showing up anything at all. And it's really super annoying. Let me see here. Maybe tools, broadcast. No. Why is it not working? YouTube. Do that. Do the thing. Is it going out? I don't even know. No, it's not.
That's because it's going out on the website.
No, everything's broke. Everything's broken.
Broke's off.
Everything is awful.
Yeah.
Oh, it'll never be out of my head.
Okay. Now, yes, everything is broken. However, we will actually be able to see all of this. The thing that we've just gone through, we'll be able to see all of this after the fact. So, let me tell Kate. I'm sorry, Kate.
Well, Ken, didn't we use a different link last time?
Yeah, I can't find the link, and it's not working.
The commentators?
It's just not working.
Can we bring her into the hangout like last time? Or like last time?
Yeah, we could do that.
Did what now?
Oh yeah. We totally brought people that weren't in the show into the hangout to watch it.
Well, you know, if that's what it takes.
It worked. We had two people in.
Who's the other one?
Bella.
Okay, so since that's the case, I'm going to go ahead and invite our listener into the hangout. Hopefully this will work out well.
One lucky listener wins an invite.
That's right. There you go. So when things go horribly, horribly wrong, our little family here at Cowan Services Studios and Overlay Radio, we band together as best we can to cobble something together called a broadcast. Oh, by the way, yeah, we're doing a show. I suppose we should get back to the notes. So we've done what we can at this point, and we're just going to soldier on. There's so many things that we could do. It's ridiculous. Okay, closing that. And oh, great. Now, you know what? I've lost the show notes. Yep. They're there. Okay. All right. Take 35. Welcome to Overlay Radio Show 95 for Friday, February 5th, 2016, where we dismantle current events for your entertainment through mostly rational conversations that make you go, oh, really? I'm your host, Andy Cowan, with David O'Connor, Michael Robinson, Fred Sims, Stephen Griffin, and Ren Cowan. Welcome, everyone. Hey! No new reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, etc. Errata?
Well, that's not totally true. I've fabricated a Stitcher review from Amon Bundy. It's on there just because I wanted to test it out. So it's totally fabricated. I wanted to see how to send people there or explain to other people. And I signed up as Amon Bundy and posted a review.
That's great.
Oh, my God. Okay, thank you.
It was 5-star, by the way. He loves
the
show.
You're a gentleman and a scholar.
Well, of course. Awesome. Of course he'd love our show because we talked about him for 5 weeks in a row.
That is true.
Of course he would love our show.
I think we furthered his cause.
You know...
I hope not.
You know, I definitely hope not. But I think that we might as well mention it that I have a story out on Raw Story. Jailed Oregon militants have extensive criminal histories. Many aren't even allowed to carry guns.
Seriously?
Wow.
Yes. So, you know, when we have those meetings of the minds that say, you know, we have laws in place, we just need to enforce them. You know, they're right. We actually need to just enforce the laws that we have.
That's a
or
start.
Else you get people taking over bird sanctuaries.
The most strategic location in the United States.
Clearly. I mean,
obviously.
They must be some kind of mastermind.
It's one spot below taking over a Taco Bell.
or Fort Knox.
No, see.
It's several spots below that because they had food.
That's very true. Snacks are available at a Taco Bell.
That's right. You know, fourth meal.
You don't
have to
ask for help.
Exactly. They got those Crunchwrap sliders now.
Oh, for a dollar.
Oh, with sriracha. Mm-hmm. Oh,
sriracha chicken's so good.
You slather sriracha on anything, and it becomes the nectar of the gods.
They're so good and so bad.
Tasty firestorm.
I love how sriracha came out of nowhere, too. Sriracha's been around forever, and I've always loved it, and now it's like, hey, that's super popular. Everyone uses it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So while we're on the topic of gun-loving nuts and everything, the Florida House passed a bill to allow guns on college campuses.
Because that's a fantastic
Isn't that
idea.
Wonderful? Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of irresponsible, you know...
Drunk.
A bunch of irresponsible, drunk, you know, hormonal young adults.
Frat boys. Let's just say frat boys.
Don't forget the guns. Frat girls.
The sorority sisters, yeah, they've got some issues too. But the House voted 80-37 to pass the bill after an hour and a half of contentious debate. Republicans said the bill would keep campuses safer, while Democrats argued that it was insane.
Basically, because it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wednesday night on Greek Row, you'll see the Tri-Delts doing their standard rifle practice.
But do you understand that, like, this is the slippery slope of, hey, at college it worked, one person thwarted a gun event, and now, hey, let's vote in guns at high school.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Come on now.
Well, there we go.
Oh, they've already got that.
We're being oppressed by the 1% again. See? There it is.
Well, I also know I've seen professors actually at colleges saying, yeah, you can have guns on campus all you want, but do not bring them to my classroom, and if the campus actually tries to enforce that, they'll leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two bills were sent to Governor Rick Scott on unanimous votes. The first would ban recreational use of guns in densely settled neighborhoods. Okay. And the other would change Florida's 10-20 life sentencing law that sets mandatory minimum sentences for crimes involving guns. It would give judges flexibility when sentencing people convicted of aggravated assault. The House was also scheduled to vote on a bill to allow licensed gun owners to openly carry their weapons. Yay! Isn't that all just lovely?
Because the stand your ground state needs open carry, too.
No!
My stance is, has always been, if we're going to allow guns, mm-hmm. it's far better to not have the concealed option, because then at least you know who's armed.
There's that.
Yeah.
I'm also because with the concealed holsters, if you don't have the option of the concealed holster, you're far more likely to shoot yourself than anybody else. Mm. If you tuck it in your jeans or pants and whatnot.
That's yeah. I can
agree with
that. So
people carrying illicitly will be likely to shoot themselves versus somebody else.
Very true, because there are those stories literally every day.
There was a story about a mother who had like a bra holster and ended up shooting herself in the chest when she was just adjusting her bra.
That's boob abuse. I can't get behind that.
Oh, no, it's terrible.
Yeah, there is one thing in this whole mess that I actually agree with, is the whole abolishing mandatory minimum sentences, because the research shows that mandatory minimum sentences, in any case, don't work.
No.
But other than that, this is all bonkers still.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, beyond that, mandatory minimum sentences are also, again, not giving judges flexibility involving a case is killing what a judge is capable of doing, the reason to have the job in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's shown to not work. It just doesn't. Mandatory minimum sentences are a bad.
Yeah.
Also, when it comes to weapons, I'm all for open carry knives and swords. Let's go back to the old school.
Absolutely.
I'm all right with that.
Besides, swords make a really great fashion accessory.
They're shiny. They can be they can be bedazzled. You know, certainly.
Anything could be bedazzled.
I would carry a Highlander sword everywhere and then just yell there can be only one at everybody.
See that?
There can be only one!
That might be a problem. Maybe.
I couldn't say I'd attack them. I'd just yell it at them.
Oh, well.
I'd probably attack them.
Well, that would be assault, though.
Why?
I have a sword. I don't care.
Well, then it ends up being battery. May I batter up?
Only if I touch them, it's battery. That's, it's still assault as long as I threaten them.
Verbal assault, yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Just keep it verbal.
So.
Semantics.
It is all semantics. Okay, so other things that happened on this day in history. The Southern Pacific Railroad completes its transcontinental sunset route from New Orleans to California in 1883. Immigration Act passed by 2/3 vote despite President Woodrow Wilson's veto in 1917. United Artists was created by Charlie Chaplin, D.W. Griffith, Douglas Fairbanks, and Mary Pickford in 1919. Hitler urged Mussolini to fight harder in face of the British and press into Libya in 1941. See how well that went for him. And General Manuel Noriega was indicted on U.S. drug charges in 1988. And, some of the other stories here have been brought to me by my lovely panel, my staff of characters here. So, usual suspects, who brought in the Twitter ups efforts to thwart terrorist tweets?
I did that.
That's difficult to say.
Yeah.
Twitter. That's tweet. Very difficult to say. Twitter ups efforts to thwart terrorist tweets.
Well, terrorist tweets is...
Terrorist tweets.
Um.
Perfect. Okay, talk about this.
Basically, Twitter forever has been positioned itself as the global town square that's open to discourse from all. But they've realized that groups like ISIL have been using it to recruit new members or basically get their information out there and get their propaganda out there for other people.
With a tell with tweet, yes.
Yes. And so what they're doing now is they're just trying to, you know, suspend accounts that are related to terrorist organizations or keep that information from getting out because they realize that they hold a very important place in that whole, you know, broadcasting terrorist organizations' information that if they can stop it from getting out, it essentially takes away a big tool for those terrorist organizations. So they understand their role in that, and they're being active in trying to stem that tide from the source.
Yeah, sadly, it's just a really giant game of whack-a-mole, you know, because it's easy to create. I mean, it's trivial to create a Twitter account.
Yeah, so. I mean, it is, and you can have that all day long as they're active in getting out there and trying to stop it. Yeah. As soon as you start going down that road, then they can squash you.
Yeah,
you can whack that mole once they start going down that road, and you're going to have to dedicate someone to that all the time.
It's not as difficult as you might think, and nor is this concept even as ridiculous as it might originally sound, because on the surface it sounds kind of absurd to think about it. You know, terrorists using Twitter. But, you know, this is a similar thing that...
Oh, Michael?
That are used... Okay, they use that network to communicate for...
We're apparently having some lag
they can hide in. And the companies who run these you know, massive games have been using, you know, new and improved algorithms as fast as they can churn them out to track and trace logins from people doing illegal business. And they've actually helped a lot with the law enforcement tracking these people down.
Yeah. I hope that everything that you said actually got through to the YouTube, because it was breaking up on our end.
Again, when I hear about this, I've got two things. One is, so Twitter is finally doing itself what Anonymous did for it about 3 or 4 months ago, where they took down over 14,000 terrorist accounts. And also, I'm glad to see that actually a major company is moving in on this, because I've had contacts in the intelligence industry and such that have gone on. Their whole thing is they go through social media, they go through these channels, and they specifically are paid to look for and track terrorist recruiting through social media, which actually is a major conduit for them.
Yeah, it's trivial to create the account, but it's not trivial to get followers. So I think there's a bit of an uptake. So yeah, go ahead and continue to swash them, and then it takes them time to build momentum again.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing, and they should continue the efforts. You know, just
I mean, they talk in the story about 125,000 suspensions. That's a lot of accounts. I mean, I know there are millions of accounts on Twitter, but 125,000 is still a big number. And especially if they're all related to terrorist organizations or people spreading the terrorist message, that's a huge step for Twitter to be taking. And hopefully that spurs other social media sites to start doing the same thing. I mean, I know Facebook, you know, they are of their own, you know, like they just did that thing with the gun sales and banning, you know, gun sales on Facebook. So, I mean, they are socially conscious in and of their own selves. Mm-hmm. But other social media sites need to be taking this step so that it's harder for these terrorist organizations to get their message out there, to start recruiting people, to target the disenfranchised and be like, hey, we've got something that you might be interested in.
Yeah. Now, speaking of recruiting, I got two stories that I wanted to bring up. One, since the armed services have been opened up to all women can serve all purposes, all roles.
All now, combat roles are open to women now.
Yes. Yep. Now, they're discussing opening up the mandatory selective service draft to all women as well.
Should.
Enjoy war, Ren.
Either everyone gets drafted or no one gets drafted. I mean, that's the only... What you can argue argue the morality of the draft all you want, and I'm not even going to get into that because, honestly, I think it should be a... I think there should be a Selective Service thing because I think it is a moral imperative of us to defend our country as long as we participate in the governing of our country, which we do because we vote. But beside that, either all or nothing. Be fair here. If they can do everything, then they have to get drafted too.
Mm-hmm. I believe that's right. Ren, you had something to add, I think.
I'm kind of on the fence, just in the draft in itself. I mean,
is it the draft that you're more on the fence about? Or
Think if there is a draft, everyone should be. It should be mandatory, but I have issues with mandatory draft to begin with. So,
I wouldn't be against Israel side of compulsory military service for the 2 years or whatever, and then you're granted certain things like the free college or, you know, like it helps you as a citizen of that particular country.
I mean, they're not the only nation that does it. Germany does it. A bunch of other nations do it. You serve. If you are going to be a citizen and vote, you serve.
Yeah, I think that Switzerland has it for... has it for women as well.
And I mean, that's the main difference is it's not like here where you put in a certain amount of time and then you can re-up and become career military. Mm-hmm. Once you put in your minimum allotted time in those countries, you're done. You don't have to do it anymore. And you may not see any war zone or it'll essentially just get you in wicked shape and you provided a service to your country.
Yeah, it has a lot of good qualities about it. It does. You know, as long as you don't suffer lead poisoning. Yeah. That's one thing.
I have flat feet.
The advantage of us, unlike Israel's, we're not currently in a state of war, nor have been for the last 60 years, not like they've been.
Well, technically we have been in a state of war for almost ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
at no point during my lifetime have we not been in war.
Yeah.
Not in the way that they are, though.
Right.
True. I mean, that's very...
We do war...
Hey, we talked about semantics earlier, didn't we?
Yeah, we do war a totally different way.
We are currently having a lead-based border dispute with Canada.
Yeah,
we're not worried about the Amish creating their own country inside of our borders, so we're good.
No, not the Amish, just maybe some Mormon ranchers. That's
no one
it.
Would live in Amish country. That would be terrible.
But the apple butter man,
and those non-electric heaters,
and the heroin.
No, they are electric. Those are electric heaters. You just if you're Amish, you're not allowed to use it.
Going back to the last story, real quick.
Yeah.
I think I would be more for the draft if we took care of the veterans that we have now.
Another
It's like
beast.
We need to fix this problem before we create a bigger problem.
Wow, that's such a concept.
Strictly speaking, the way that the Selective Service registration works is that all you're doing is putting you on the list. All they're doing is putting you in the pool that can be drawn from. If they make a list to draft people, which we haven't had to do
since
we
Vietnam.
Actually have more people in the military than we need. They're just not allocated properly.
Yeah.
Like most things.
Okay. David, pipe up your audio a little bit. You're very low. You're far away, and I can't individually bring you up.
How's that?
Oh, that's beautiful. That is lovely. All okay. Right. Excellent. I can hear you now. Now, other things that, as far as recruitment go, another... small disaster and also giant point of Schadenfreude came up with this men's rights activist that was I see some face palms.
Oh, do tell.
Oh, you hadn't heard about this guy?
No.
Okay, men's rights blogger Roosh V. His real name was Darius Valazedes.
Darius Valazedes.
No, I want to butcher his name. Let me butcher his name. He deserves
butcher
it.
His name. He's an asshole. Butcher his name.
Darius, Darius Valiva. Something like that.
I think that we will respect your name when you are not a dick.
Exactly.
I think the ARY are silent, so it's just douche.
Douche. Douche canoe. That's it. Oh, yeah. That's what it was.
Perfect. That is a fantastic name. If I ever have another kid, Douche Canoe Sims.
That's not going to happen.
Okay. So, anyway, he's dominated headlines all week for his coordination of simultaneous meetups of, quote, like-minded men across 43 countries.
I was planning on going.
Oh, yes, I saw that you were planning on going to one of his meetups.
Yeah, you said it ruined your Friday.
But, you know, it wasn't for the same reasons that he was having the meetup. No, he's an anti-feminist blogger. He runs a blog called Return of Kings, and Roosh called for male followers to gather this Saturday, February 6th, so tomorrow, for what he referred to as International Meetup Day. Locations spanned from Sydney to Toronto, London, Edinburgh, you know, all over the place, including our fair city of Orlando, just across the way. Roosh and his blog regularly espouse typical men's rights activists' views that society is, quote, dominating neo-matriarchy where men dare not lift their heads.
I think I just vomited a little.
Yeah. Oh, that was a verb? You know, where you vomit and burp at the same... Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, basically, where he really, really ran afoul was when he was basically calling for legalizing rape.
I'm sorry, what?
Yes. According to this gentleman and his followers, that should never be a thing. If it is in a domestic situation, if it is in your house behind closed doors, it is not rape.
Because
there is no situation.
The look on your face is priceless.
In which there is no consent in that situation. There is consent.
However, beyond that, because I actually read some of his writings and I lost brain cells because of it.
Yeah.
He actually went on to go on the idea. His idea was this will protect women from allowing themselves to become intoxicated or be around men they're not sure of. Once again, getting to the whole victim blaming ideology.
Yeah. Was it the CDC that put out that women who are not on birth control should not be served alcohol? I believe I'm going to have to find that story, but this relates to it that I believe it was the CDC that suggested, or somebody with the CDC that suggested, that women not on birth control should no longer be served alcohol because of the chance of this.
I saw the CDC report, and while it was, say, it didn't go through the proper PR office to make it correct, I understand their reasons, and medically I can agree with it, but they did not put that thing out correctly.
I think I can understand where they're headed.
Their mind is wrong.
It's a major indictment of our society. That is a recommendation the CDC would come up with.
Almost every day is in a major indictment of our society, it seems.
Yeah, you could say all that. So anyway, the bright side of this
is there a bright side.
It's amazing.
Does he die at the end?
Nearly.
Close. If he'd have held the meetup, he would have died.
Yeah. He had to cancel the meetups, at least the one in Orlando, because of threats of violence against him and the people that would show up.
No. Get this right. The greatest thing he said is he did not feel safe at night, and I believe his followers didn't feel safe at night.
My favorite part of this whole thing, my favorite of the groups, of the many, many groups that told them, if you do this,
I think he's about to hit
hunt
it.
You down, was the Canadian Women's Boxing Association.
Yes.
Yeah. The Women's Boxing Association.
We're just going to beat the crap out of you.
No joke, a group of about 12 to 15 women in a boxing association that basically said, we will show up at these meetings and beat the shit out of you.
I've seen Canadian boxers.
And every single
one
of these women was gorgeous and ripped to hell and could beat the shit out of anyone just by looking at them, and I love them all.
Oh, yeah, that blonde one with the tattoos was no joke. Like, out of the whole group, she looked like she was ready to whoop someone's ass. Like,
you would snap me in half.
Yeah.
If I had the ability, I would. This is ridiculous.
Oh, yes. It's quite ridiculous.
Welcome to America 2016.
Yeah, so for anybody looking for more... more information on this douche canoe, you can find that in our show notes. I've got it as topic number 6 there. And our show notes are available at O'ReillyRadio.com for this episode 95. Just search. We got a very integrated search, and you can find anything with keywords and just anything that's in the notes. So it's rather
also,
easy to
his site now has a report on why they pulled back.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Good stuff.
Wrong?
They'll never admit that.
They'll never admit that.
That is never an admission they will make because they're men. And men are never wrong in their eyes.
They're manly men.
Men in tights.
No, they're not in tights. No. Yeah.
Oh, no, men's rights activists.
They should be.
Yes, they should be.
MRAs.
I wouldn't want to besmirch. I wouldn't want to besmirch men in tights like that. Men in tights are awesome.
It's a thing now.
I'm
going to make it a thing.
What have I done? What did I do?
When you mispronounce something?
You are good with words, but your articulation. Again. Articulation.
What was that? Everyone gets to Andy one thing.
Okay. Hey, I talk a lot in this show.
You do.
There is that.
I talk a lot on this show, so that's a thing.
White host privilege.
It's my fucking show.
I'm sorry. I'll turn away.
It's show host privilege.
Yeah, it's show host privilege. If you want to, you know what? Democratization. Go make your own podcast. I don't care who you are, what color you are, what gender you are, whether or not you want to do these. No, I do care about that. Don't do that. Yeah, don't be the douche canoe, because that's not a podcast.
What,
we
can't
ever
start a meninist podcast?
You could.
It doesn't even roll off the tongue.
Meninist?
Meninist.
Meninist.
Let's go to Cribbly Challenge. Let's have a Mennonite podcast.
Yeah, well. Wow. I was wondering if you were going to go there. Usually it's up to me to bring up the religious references. So
that would last 2 weeks.
Yeah, okay. So, topic 7, transgender Girl Scout stands up to bully who wouldn't buy cookies from a boy in a dress.
I also brought this story.
Then talk, so that I don't have to.
I thought it was amazing. essentially, a bully who looked at a transgender girl just trying to sell Girl Scout cookies, and not just Girl Scout cookies for, like, the Girl Scouts, but she was also selling these to donate to foster kids because she is herself a foster kid. And he said, I'm not going to buy those from a girl in a dress. And basically,
a boy in a dress.
Oh, I'm sorry, a boy in a dress. Basically stood up to this bully and went online and got a ton of supporters. And, you know, her foster mom was behind her. And, you know, it's just one of those things that we're looking for gender equality and we're looking for all these things. And when you get bested by a Girl Scout age transgender girl, that's moving forward. That's letting everybody know that, you know, your bigoted views are no longer going to be tolerated, especially by people who probably aren't even really old enough to understand your bigoted view, but she's not going to take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's point out the fact that she was able to stand up to this, do the right thing, and was able to get all this kind of following, and she is 9.
9 years old.
9. Yep.
Like I said, not even old enough to really understand it, because at one point, you know, like she said, it made me sad. I'm a girl. She was like, why am I not good enough? You know, those type of things where that's her viewpoint, but at the same time, she's not going to take that from an adult male who's trying to bully her and her life. You know, that's what she is. She is a girl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's not going to take a bigoted view from some essentially mindless individual who doesn't understand how things work in science, in biology, in all of these areas. And a 9-year-old put him in his place and took it to such a level that we're talking about it on this show. And again, it's not just for the Girl Scouts. She wanted to donate all these cookies and these proceeds to foster kids, to help these kids that, like her, are in a situation that, you know, they don't have parents, they don't have a family, and she wants to help them.
And let me tell you, I myself was not a foster kid, but I was in the military, and you get a lot of people out of the foster system into the military because they have nowhere else to go. And I heard some horror stories. Those kids need all the money they can get. So good on you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at the picture, if I saw this kid walk up to my door, I'd be like, yeah, I'll buy Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, it's like, that's a little girl.
Yeah, I don't.
Somebody who had to dig deep enough to find out that this kid was transgender and actually give a shit.
Well, it does say that it was a neighbor, so I'm wondering if the neighbor, like, maybe knew the family and kind of had the inside information. Probably, because if you look at the picture, there's no way that's not a little girl.
Yeah, probably watched the child go from being a little boy to being a girl. So,
what more good things out of this is the fact that this generation is the most, having two children, they're the most accepting that I've come in contact with. I think it might be the age group.
Well, it's the age group, and it depends on what part of the country you're in.
Is taught.
Yes. Yeah. And
100%, yes.
Yes, and I think parents in their 30s, you know, early, late 20s, early 30s, are raising these kids to actually, you know, care about each other, and it shows. It really does.
It's something, if you really care about, you're not going to teach them to be an asshole.
No, you're teaching them to accept people for who they are, regardless of how they're different.
Yeah.
This is one of those things that just utterly confuses me on a continued basis. It's like the people essentially that are in charge now or in retirement age, they were the hippie generation. Mm-hmm. You know, the people in their 50s. And
everybody love everybody.
Love and peace and all that type of stuff. And it's like,
and then they got old, and they got
backslide so
no,
hard.
Not so
man.
Much, honestly.
Like,
in that era, it was very much down the middle, where people that were bigoted and people that cared about everybody. It was very much both in the 60s and 70s. I mean, you had both groups.
Yeah, we still have complete institutionalized racism. You know, it's just the nature of the beast. It's going to
Hi, Texas. How you doing?
Hi, Deep South.
Yeah, Babel Belt.
It's everywhere. It's right down to the zoning laws that were enacted after integration to make sure that the blacks stayed in a location away from the whites and the good jobs and the good schools and all of that.
Not quite the good schools. When I lived in Sarasota, all the good schools bust in the black students from the black communities so that their sports teams had good athletes.
Oh, I'm wow.
Not, like, when I was looking at the school zoning areas for my children to go to school, you would see, like, oh, this is technically the, I guess you would call it ghetto or low-income communities, and none of them were going to the school that was in their section. They were all bused to schools up to an hour and a half away so that those schools could have good sports teams.
Well,
it's funny what money does.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Well, as we say here on O'Reilly Radio, follow the money.
Follow the money.
Follow the money. So, okay.
And then bring some tissues, because it's going to make you sad for humanity.
Speaking of things that make you sad for humanity, Pharma Bro.
This dude's a cockroach.
Mr. Martin Skrill.
I played the fifth.
Still in the news.
Well, because he's such vermin that you can't stop talking about him, because it's just, he's a train wreck.
He needs to crawl back into the hole whence he came.
He is the definition of smarmy.
He's a human troll.
Yeah. So he was called before Congress, and every question except, you know, what's your name, basically, you know, did you do X, which was like, butter your toast in the morning, you know, did you butter your toast in the morning? Yeah. Oh, see, you good. You can actually answer questions. That was the level of interrogation here. Everything else, you know, on very limited things. I mean, he's not sworn in. He's in front of Congress, so there's no judge, jury, executioner here.
Why was he there? So they can ask him stupid questions?
They have hearings like this every once in a while. It's like, why did they have baseball athletes testify before Congress about whether or not they were using creatine and steroids? That happened.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah,
because
what
they needed
does this
to divert
have to do with running the country exactly.
They needed to Nothing. Divert attention from something else, so they had America's pastimes baseball players in the Congress.
Well, not only that, but it does show that, you know, these are the things that Americans care about, so we need to care about them too.
They're trying to show that, hey, we're totally relevant and actually paying attention to what you care about, guys.
We too are taking the pulse of America.
We need to have a stern talking to with Pharma Bro.
Which, if they paid attention to this show, they would already know that we don't give a shit about steroids in baseball, and we also don't give a shit about Pharma Bro.
Well, some people do. Yeah. Some people do.
If they wanted to ask him questions about his security and exchange and have like a real investigation with real stakes on the line, then I'd be all for this thing. But this is just this political stunt.
It is.
It's meaningless.
It's part to actually for the senators and people who are on certain committees to actually educate themselves about what the hell these people are doing, because they're the ones who pass the laws.
Yeah.
Into being, so they're the legislative branch is what they do. But the thing that gets me is I actually watched his testimony in front of Congress, or in front of that.
Painful, committee. Wasn't it?
And it wasn't just painful. I remember a Dave Chappelle skit where his character was in front of Congress going, I plead the fifth!
Yeah.
Going, oh my God, this is literally this in real life. This is this guy is doing to every question.
Every question.
I'm holding a sign that said, I plead the fifth.
One, yeah. Two, three, four, fifth! That was a fantastic sketch.
That's pretty much what he did. yeah. Okay, so that's Pharma Bro. He's still out there, still being a douchebag. And other douchebags. Well, there was a man that was ejected from a hole in a plane that he made with a bomb.
So the guy that bombed the plane is the one that got sucked out the hole that he made?
On fire. He was a burning mass of flesh all the way down.
And he was the only one who got pulled out.
I want to see this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Karma.
Yeah.
Michael Bay. Pay attention.
Michael Bay.
We've got an idea for your next screenplay right here.
We got an after-school special for you.
Explosions, fire, douchebag falling out of plane. You got it. Go.
Yeah. What I love is it took – I mean, I saw pictures of this plane after it came down. I looked at the hall and everything else, and I've seen all these people going, we don't know if there was device used. We don't know if it was a bomb or everything else. I'm looking at this going, guys, this was not a structural failure.
Nope.
This is a bomb. I can see where the flames burnt the outside of the hull.
Yeah.
You
it's fairly obvious.
It runs up towards the front of the plane, just north of the engines on that hang
it's
off
right,
the wing.
Yeah, right
and
at
it's
the
such
edge
a
of the
tiny,
wing.
Like, the hull, you would expect the bomb to be bigger. It's like he had bomb problems.
Did he use, a meth lab to blow up the plane?
Who knows?
I think the meth lab would have been more effective.
That was fantastic. He had a premature explosion.
Premature detonation, indeed. Yes.
I love, though, looking at this and seeing actually how much damage that plane took.
Yeah, well, not really that much.
Where did the plane go out of?
Basic airworthiness should help people go, it takes actually a hell of a bomb to actually take out a plane.
Yeah, well, a good bomb in the right place can do it. This was a bad bomb in the wrong place. So
he's four seats back from blowing the door off the plane. If he'd have just moved back.
Yeah, but the thing is, those doors, even if they come off the plane, it'll depressurize the cabin, but it won't do anything to the plane.
Yeah, there's a lot of, they beef a lot of
the
structural integrity.
They're fairly strong,
the
especially around the doors, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's the point where people have to get off in an emergency, so they don't want it to buckle like a can of Coke. So, ever since the news broke that a man was ejected from a hole in the side of a Somali plane, we've been hearing two things. One, the hole was probably caused by a bomb, but we don't have details on that bomb. And two, there were no details on the person who was flung from the plane. As it turns out, it's all probably the same thing. The guy who was sucked from the plane is most likely the one who detonated the bomb, according to some reports. So, according to the Wall Street Journal, the man was allegedly able to get through security with no incident by showing up to the airport in a wheelchair. Once he and his chair were loaded into the aircraft by staff and the plane took off, he moved to a regular seat. Then he attempted to blow up the plane.
He failed spectacularly.
This is the way that they should be handled. Even if they find out all his information, just be like, we have no details on that guy. He tried to blow up the plane and he got sucked out. We don't know anything. We don't care.
Don't give terrorists any ideas or pointers.
Yeah,
it's like,
no notoriety experiment. Whatsoever.
Exactly. Don't make it a popular thing or don't make it awesome, for terrorists.
Don't give them what they want, which is attention.
Yes.
I feel exactly the same way.
They're like 3-year-old children.
We should not know
their
the
identities.
Names of mass shooters.
Yeah. Well, that is a double-edged sword. Anytime that you withhold information in favor of something like that, it's a double-edged sword because people want all that information. Well, otherwise, you get the conspiracy theorists out there.
I think they should withhold it, but they shouldn't make it as easily available. Like they shouldn't put it on like the 6 o'clock news 15 times. Like,
broadcast on the nightly news. It should be like a fucking.
We should not hear this name every hour for the next 3 days. It should be one blurb. You get the name. If you want to go find it, it's out there on the internet. Go search for it yourself. But it shouldn't be just dispensed on a continuous basis and make them into celebrity status.
I just don't know that we can do anything about it. I just don't know that we can do anything about it really logistically.
It comes down to not being able to really get a handle on what the media puts out there. And like in the case of like a Dylann Roof, like that name shouldn't be out. I shouldn't know that name off the top of my head. I should know the names of the victims involved, especially considering one of them was a congressman or state representative.
Yeah, state representative and pastor.
I should know that name off the top of my head, and I don't.
Yeah.
Again, it's the issue you get into with freedom of press versus censorship laws.
And
well, here's
selling soap. You know, that's what they're there for. They're there to sell the commercials.
Here's my suggestion, and if one of our news agencies wants to actually be a standout news agency and not be like all the rest of them, they can say, here's our new policy on our network. We are going to read the criminal's name once. And that is the only time that we will ever read it on air. And from here on out, we're going to discuss the victims, and we're gonna stand behind their families.
You know, that used to be standard procedure. It wasn't until somewhere around the Apollo 13 disaster that they all turned into vultures. There used to be actual integrity in reporting, and now they're just.
Or at the very least,
they're
empathy.
Parasites. Yeah.
24-hour news changed that completely. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah.
We have Ted Turner to thank for that. Yeah.
And that type of thing, I mean, where you're getting into that, like, we'll say it once and that's it. Those type of news agencies will go out of business like Al Jazeera.
I found the story that you were thinking of. Senator wants women to take pregnancy tests before drinking at bars.
Yes.
Is a senator?
A state senator in Alaska, of all places.
Of course it's Alaska.
I'm sorry I labeled the CDC as such a terrible place where it was just an Alaskan senator.
Definitely not the Center for Disease Control.
They must be friends with Sarah Palin.
Well, you were thinking of all the Zika stuff, so CDC's in the zeitgeist. So a state senator in Alaska who wants women to take pregnancy tests before drinking in bars also decreed birth control as something only taken by irresponsible people. They redacted absolutely batshit crazy man. I mean, Alaskan lawmaker who says he's on a mission to eradicate fetal alcohol syndrome, which is that's a good thing. We don't want fetal alcohol syndrome, I understand, is defending his plan to provide state-funded pregnancy tests in bars. He says if women find out they are pregnant at a bar, it will stop them from drinking, thereby decreasing the incidence of fetal alcohol syndrome throughout the state. That is totally nuts, obviously, but wait, there's more insanity. Oh, God, no.
It's Alaska. You don't have anything else to do but drink.
Okay. Right? If we have any Alaskan listeners, this is State Senator Pete Kelly, Republican.
Of course.
He said Monday before the Alaska Senate that birth control may not protect Alaskan women who drink regularly from getting pregnant. Quote, if you have people who are binge drinking or chronic drinkers, where I don't know why he's Southern all of a sudden.
I know, it's like, why is he from Florida?
Canadian.
Okay, hang on. All right, there. Sorry. Okay, so if you have people who are binge drinking or chronic drinkers, we're going to hesitate to say use birth control or your protection against fetal alcohol syndrome because, again, as I say, binge drinking is a problem.
Now you're from Minnesota.
Okay. Same thing.
It's the same accent. But the way that he's projecting it, like, I take it a whole nother way. They're saying that binge drinking is a problem and having the babies and fetal alcohol syndrome. But I look at it as he's also a Republican, so he's probably against abortion. So he's probably against, you know, having an abortion because you got raped because, oh, it's the woman's fault because she was drunk.
This,
you know, like those type of things. It's all one step to the next.
This is a person that views a woman only as a baby factory, and at all times they are pregnant. At all times they are potentially pregnant because that is their purpose.
So they belong back in the 1850s.
Well, no, that's how you stay warm in Alaska.
Well,
I mean, where's the lie, though? That was strong.
You went too far, sir. You go back to your game. Stealth, sir. Stealth.
Oh, that was rough. That was rough. Okay, I'll put them.
But no, the CDC did put out a report, and one of their recommendations for bringing down fetal alcohol syndrome is, you know, doctor, nurses, or other health professionals can prevent alcohol use during pregnancy in 5 ways. Number 2 is recommend birth control to women who are having sex, if appropriate, not planning to get pregnant, and drinking alcohol. That's actually from CDC.gov, and I linked it in our chat.
Okay, and then he just took it.
Yeah,
one
he
step
went
further.
He
to
went,
the see, evangelical
going, this is a
degree.
Good idea to
well,
prevent
of course.
It. He went, let's just prevent it by just preventing it.
Yeah. No, he took it to the misogyny degree that the CDC only hinted at. Again, pregnancy is not just a woman's issue.
No, it isn't.
I create the other half of that.
Yeah. It takes two.
Yeah,
currently.
What?
Currently.
Who didn't know that? Who just said what?
Sucks head.
I will explain it to you.
For some reason, I still want to make
him
Southern.
I need a moving picture book.
This is
you don't want my moving picture book.
Oh.
It moves
a flip book.
Yeah, it moves real slow, and you're not gonna like my butt.
Okay. Continuing what he was burying himself with, this assumes that if you know you are pregnant, you'll act responsibly. He told Anchorage Daily News, "Birth control is for people who don't necessarily want to act responsibly."
No.
So apparently,
it's for women that don't want babies.
So apparently, recreational sex in Alaska is verboten.
Wait, isn't birth control the most responsible?
Yes.
Yes, actually, it is
because it works, unlike abstinence.
Time. Yeah. Let's ask Bristol Palin.
Yeah, because you actually have to abstain.
Maybe this is an Alaskan thing.
I'm
too cold up there, maybe.
He just stuck my brain.
Republicans tend to do that.
Well, now remember, if you're part of a very specific mythology, even abstinence doesn't work.
That's true. That's true.
I just
you know, you bring up an excellent point because
the most
Mary
pious
was supposedly a virgin, and yet
exactly
supposedly
so hung up over it.
The most pious woman could still end up with God baby,
or better yet,
of course,
go to Greece.
Of course, if that happened, if the Messiah was born nowadays, they'd probably stone her to death for being a whore.
Most likely, yeah.
Go to the actual Greek religion and just say, unfortunately, Zeus was horny that day.
Honestly,
yeah.
The woman probably
like
got raped, and they've been victim-blaming since it happened.
Yes, yes.
Yep.
But most problems that happened in Greek and Roman mythology were because Zeus couldn't keep it in his pants.
It was Zeus, and it was Tuesday.
Yeah.
What do you want?
Why did Zeus have to keep it in his pants? I mean,
come on. Well, he didn't.
Father of the gods here, people.
He was Dr. Manhattan.
Getting busy. Okay, so. All right.
Hera flips the table. Everyone's pissed off.
Yeah, that kind of happens. Okay, let's have a little bit of a break from chatting.
Are you annoyed by misinformation spreading like crazy, and you want to stop the flood of nonsense coming from all directions? Go to Wikipedia, as do all those millions out there. Did you know there's an edit button on all Wikipedia articles? Why don't you go and hit that button to start making the world's largest online encyclopedia a more reliable source of information? If you're specifically interested in skeptical topics, come and join us at Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia, an international endeavor to change the world for the better, word by word. There are many ways you can contribute. You just need to start. You speak several languages? All the more reason to join us. We provide training and all the help you need. If you want to make a change, there's a nice community waiting for you out there. Contact us at gsowteam@gmail.com, visit our website, that's gorillaskeptics.com, or check out the Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia Facebook page.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are we're back here. We have a new segment, which is really kind of been always part of the show, and it's basically science, bitches.
You just wanted to say bitches.
Yes, I did. Okay, so we're going to have a couple science articles, at most five. And, well, of course, that's how many we have tonight, because it was a good week for science. And we have a couple from Mike. Mike, you brought in something about the guinea worm. Would you like to chat with us about that for a moment? Mike? Mike?
Did he mute himself?
Mike.
Geosid.
Okay.
There we go.
Yeah, yeah. Mike. It's okay, because I was mostly just reminding myself what the hell I was talking about. I brought in two articles this week. This one won the top spot because I think it's just because it's not particularly interesting in that it's something new that we've discovered that people should know about. It's just good news.
Yes.
The guinea worm, which as far back as 1986, the year I was born, was found in like 21 countries and afflicted like 4 million people across the world. Last year, there were 22 cases.
Wait, that's way less than 4 million.
Yeah, you're right.
22
you can do math.
Cases of this 22. Disease. Because this disease has been targeted, I believe, by a foundation funded by former President Jimmy Carter.
Indeed.
And it is now the second disease ever to have effectively been eradicated by human medicine. The first being smallpox. Smallpox exists in a couple of canisters in a couple of labs across the world. This is basically at that point. The disease no longer exists because we wiped it out. And that is a victory for, you know, modern medical science over nature. So suck it, creationists.
Can I ask you a quick question, Michael?
You can certainly ask. I don't necessarily know if I'm going to have the answer.
Okay, well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because in the story, they talk about how this was done without vaccines or real, like, treatment. So is this not, like, kind of an argument in the anti-vaxxer case?
No, it is absolutely not in the anti-vaxxer case, because even though there was no vaccine, and I believe there's no vaccine because this disease is actually caused by a parasite, and you can't really vaccinate against parasite.
Yeah, it's a physical creature. Yeah.
Right, you get it through the water.
It's still, there are still principles behind vaccination science that applied here.
Okay.
Quarantines and herd immunities.
Mm-hmm.
Those principles worked here. You separate people who have the disease from people who don't. And especially from people who are particularly susceptible to it. You get that buffer zone of people in the middle who are not particularly vulnerable to it, and you make sure that everyone is tested and treated immediately, and eventually it dies, which is the same thing we're doing with vaccinations. If the people who are vulnerable to it can't even be exposed because healthy people can't get the disease finds no food and dies.
Yeah, we are the vector of life cycle for this particular creature, and if we don't contract it, then we don't make more of the creature.
Yeah, it's that simple.
Yeah.
If no one catches it, it can't survive.
So I just, definitely getting there.
I just wanted to, you know, make sure that was clarified, just in case we have any anti-vaxxers out there.
Good call.
Any anti-vaxxer nutbags in our audience, because, oh my God, you guys are stupid.
Exactly, because on the surface, they could take that and run with it, but I wanted you to squash that for them.
Oh, absolutely not. We're going to shut that down right here.
If by some strange stroke of luck that we have some anti-vaxxers in the audience, please.
One, I hate you.
No,
yes,
no.
One,
no.
I hate you, and I'm going to explain how you're wrong.
No.
Feel free to send us an angry email.
We must reach out to them.
You don't have to hate them. You can reach out, but I hate them.
We need to have them on the show. We need to reach out to them and pull them in to the trap.
You be diplomatic. I'm the angry one. Come on.
Remember, those emails are how much they love Michael and his hatred of anti-vaxxers and retarded people.
That's right. That's right. OReillyRadioPodcast@gmail.com. Just keep them coming. Okay. So that was one of your articles, and it was, of course, fantastic, because we definitely want, frankly, I don't want parasites, especially worms, living in my body. That's
especially
the thing
because
that I don't
some
want.
Of them were up to 3 meters in length.
Yeah, and it takes weeks to extract them because they're just coming out of a hole and being wrapped around a stick.
It's super nasty.
Yeah, that's really gross.
It is Yeah, it's like that.
Yay, it's gone.
It's almost gone. It's almost gone. And really, the primary vector was contaminated water.
Yep.
So don't poop and pee where you drink. Keep the water clean. So clean drinking water and proper sanitation go an awfully long way to prolonging a healthy life.
Yeah, there was actually just a little anecdote. In a history class I once took, this is my world history class in high school, we were tasked with picking out, you know, the greatest advancement in basically modern society, and I didn't even have to think about it. Sanitation.
Yeah.
Modern sanitation technique has done so much to boost lifespans and increase quality of life. It's just... it's super important.
That's the deal, yo. That's the deal. Okay, and getting off this rock, NASA reveals some awesome 360-degree interactive videos of Mars.
Yeah, this was just fun. I mean, it's cool to be able to look, to be able to get these panoramic views of another planet, the one that we're probably going to go to first. It's it's mostly just fun. Nothing I know of that's really new happened?
No, it's not particularly new. These are stuff that's going on, but
it's just cool to see.
Yeah, that we can interact with it.
Yeah, it's a new view to us. We get usually still images or images from a roving, you know, a rover. I'm sorry, a roving rover. But being able to move around and kind of check out the views as they're being seen.
Good. Well, this roving red rover on the red planet said, "Come on over."
Yeah,
that's
but,
how
I mean,
it
it's,
works.
You know, it's like a Google Street Map for another planet. It's cool. So I wanted to bring it up.
I had to do that. Okay. So I brought a couple other science articles. Leiden physicists entangle 4 rotating photons.
Okay, someone explain to me why this is a good thing. I don't.
Okay,
so quantum entanglement.
I'll explain the entanglement process to you.
Oh God.
When you entangle something, you get two particles that are close enough to each other that you can do this. And whatever you do to one will instantaneously happen to the other, no matter how far apart they are.
They're locked.
Okay.
In state.
Which means you can do things like send information faster than the speed of light.
Oh. Yeah, that is pretty significant.
Also, correctly, there is, and we're slowly upping the distance that this can be done at, but eventually it'll be, it's instantaneous transmission. There is no lag. There also is no technically there is no upper limit as to how far you can be apart.
And there's no interference.
You could literally have, say, somebody living on Mars who has a quantum entanglement device. You have one, and it's instantaneous communication as if you're sitting in the room together.
You could have someone on the far edge of the visible visible universe.
Space
and communicate instantaneously with no signal loss.
It would be a space phone.
Frequencies we've been waiting for.
Yes.
It would also be the fix to our YouTube problem. So those Mars individuals could totes listen to the show.
Yeah, we could totally
get on that, scientists.
Okay, everybody with your quantum entanglement devices, please turn to Quark 87.
That's pretty much it. It'd basically be like a CB radio for everywhere.
That's really awesome.
Yeah. So, well, that's with 2 particles. Now, we can have more particles.
Now we can send 2 bits at once.
So that way, now we've got, instead of just, I've got one handheld and you've got the other handheld on Mars, now we've got 4 of them. Woohoo! Party line! Oh, yeah.
Party line, or it's also the idea of, you know, just like transmission of standard numbers. You have 1 or 0, so we have a 4, a yes or a no state. Now we have the possibility of a maybe state.
Yeah. We're sending more bits now.
I was going to say, further explain maybe state for people that might not.
In other words, me.
It's how, because the way this is going back to the basics of how computers work, is that you have binary code, which is just ones and zeros. It's either yes or no. And you put together a lot of yeses and a lot of nos to send big pieces of information. Mm-hmm. Whereas when that's binary coding. When you get into bigger coding, you don't have just yes or no. You can have middle states that mean different things. So you can send more complex information.
With less bits.
Yeah.
It'd be the gray area. You know, as opposed to just black and white, it's the gray area in between.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Your bits can mean more things than yes or no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is where most things exist. It's not black and white. Most things exist in the gray.
Yeah. Now, so quantum physics and quantum entanglement is hard. Okay.
And awesome.
And very awesome because it's so hard. For those that can understand it. No, you don't have to understand it.
Nobody understands quantum physics.
Yeah. Nobody fucking understands.
Nobody actually understands it.
Called it spooky action at a distance.
And that was Einstein.
Spooky action at a distance from the smartest man possibly ever. So, yeah. It's a thing, and we're always interested in new advances in that realm. Now, Something interesting also came across my desk, and here's a pop quiz for you. Trees break in high winds. You know, we've seen that. We've seen it in tornadoes and hurricanes and things like that. But they all break at the same speed.
The same speed breaks them, or
the same speed, the same wind speed breaks trees of nearly any diameter.
Okay.
Fascinating.
What speed do you think it is?
Because it makes sense because when you think about force distribution, because it's all about the amount of force over an area, and a bigger tree is going to have more area to take that hit.
But it's going to catch more wind. It's also going to have more strength. So the strength versus Surface area, but if he's saying the same speed
breaks a tree regardless of diameter, then it doesn't matter whether that diameter is 5 inches or that diameter is 12 inches.
Right.
Or 12 feet.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to break at 94 miles per hour.
Did you cheat?
You cheated. Damn it. It was supposed to be a pop quiz. Well, you were supposed to guess.
I would have said 80.
I was going 120, so I was way over.
I was going to say 100 because I remember reading something.
The rules did not say
it was 40. It was 42 meters per second or 94 miles per hour. So.
That's still a very strong wind.
I should have deduced that you didn't want me to open this door.
But is that
you should have?
You should have.
When
but
winds
I did
are
not okay. because I'm fried after
yeah,
my
it,
workout.
Yeah, it would have to be a sustained wind because
yeah, I've seen gusts of 100 miles an hour during a hurricane. I just see trees bend like hell, but I don't see them break.
Well, yeah. Especially palm trees, they're designed for that because gusting winds, you can withstand. It's sustained winds that they can't.
Different species would have different densities and different tactics on avoiding them. So yes, this was in particular type of tree, a particular type of forest, and that comment came from our listener Katie, who is in the chat room. So thank you very much for being out there and participating in the show as you are. It's interesting, but so perhaps in the species of tree, all that species of tree, regardless of their diameter, is going to break at X speed.
That would make sense.
Yeah, I think it's just a fun thought experiment. Mm-hmm. It's another one of those weird things of physics that it seems counterintuitive. You think something bigger would be stronger, but at the same time, it also has more surface area to take the force, and that's what really matters. It's just kind of fun to think about.
Yeah.
Well, you're saying that all these trees of a certain species will break at a certain wind speed, but it doesn't always happen. So that's what leads into your thought experiment, because yes, they can take a certain amount, but once they get to that level, certain ones will break and others will not.
Right. Or it could also depend on that, you know, the leaf structure breaking up the wind and creating a bubble around them, not allowing them to break.
You know. And then when
how
you get to that level
of this drag,
And when you get to that level of sustained winds, like how, you know, like gusts, certain hurricanes have gusts up to a certain amount. That's what, you know, we're talking about, or tornadoes. But what level do you have to be at to have the sustained winds of 94 miles per hour? Because, I mean, obviously those are extremely strong winds.
One of the other factors also probably at play is, does the wind step up slowly, or is it just a sudden, here's 94 mile an hour gust that just slams into this tree all of a sudden? Because there's a lot of things where you can slowly bend it and it'll go pretty far, but if you have a sudden
Oh, yeah, the snap.
Spike and force, you snap.
Yeah. Well, I'll also admit that I didn't read this story. So when they're talking about tree breakage, are they talking about at the trunk, or are they talking about losing branches? Or
from the article, it's out on Science, sciencemag.org. When a cyclone named Klaus tore through southwestern France in January 2009, it highlighted a strange phenomenon. Trees, regardless of their diameter, height, or elastic properties, don't tend to break until wind speeds reach 42 meters per second or 94 miles per hour. This seemingly odd convergence has actually been observed by several historical scientists, including Galileo and Leonardo da Vinci, both of whom suggested that mathematical law could explain the resistance of wooden beams under stress. Now, using data from new experiments, scientists say that they have found that law. In a study published this week in Physical Review E, scientists hung weights from wooden rods and pieces of pencil lead to record the maximum amount of force needed to snap the cylinder. As one might intuit, they found that for a fixed length, in increasing the diameter made the rods stronger. They could bend more before breaking. This would make tall, skinny trees more vulnerable, but the team points out trees don't grow taller without getting disproportionately thicker as well. By incorporating established laws of tree allometry. I've never heard of that particular study there.
Vocabulary word.
Allometry,
yeah, both of the practitioners are working on the problem now.
That's the most brilliant thing that you've ever said, I think. Genuinely, that's awesome. Okay. Would you explain the relationship of tree size parameters such as diameter and height? The team was able to mathematically explain why trees in Klaus's path, like those seen above in the picture, of course, in the article, gave way to wind speeds when they reached 42 meters per second. The equations show that changing characteristics of the trees had meager effects. Doubling the size of the tree only increases the required wind speed by about 9%. Likewise, using wood more resistant to fracture, oak versus pine, increased the critical wind speed by less than 10%. The scientists point out that their finding may reflect an optimization over evolutionary time, as wind speeds on Earth rarely exceed 50 meters per second. The mathematical relationship could also explain how corals and other sedentary organisms grow in water currents.
Oh, that makes so much sense. That they would all that evolutionary thing. I'm like, I was trying to wrap my mind around this, and I was like, yes, that explains why they're all the same. If they've never been under if no tree species has ever been under more pressure than that regularly, why would they ever break that limit?
Yeah, that's the maximum that they've ever had to deal with.
And I'm not a tree allometrist, obviously, because there's only two of them, as David pointed out. But
I bet we can't even pronounce their names.
I don't know necessarily that tree size parameters, diameter, and height are integral, because birch trees can get extremely tall and their diameter is still ridiculously small.
By the way, there is a wiki for tree allometry.
But it's not just a matter of the diameter of their trunk. There's also, you know, their
there's lots of it. Yeah. it's a big tangled mess of things. You know, it's kind of a little chaos project all on its own. It's not like climate.
Complicated.
Yeah, it's not like climate, like trying to figure out everything in that giant chaotic system. But there's a lot of moving parts to a sedentary tree.
Ents. They're all ents.
They're all ents.
That's the last thing we need, an ent moot.
It's going to take forever. Okay, so tree allometry is our new new vocabulary word for today.
That's what I want to be when I grow up.
I hear there's a future in it. Okay.
I'll look that up and win Scrabble with it.
There you go. Yes. I've added the link to the wiki about it, which apparently needs some attention by a serious forestry person, at least according to wiki. Okay. And also, the last article that I had was some ants never get old. They just die.
Fascinating.
They suffer no effects of actually aging until they just die.
So they just live and then they die?
Yes. In perfect health.
And then they live again because they are Mad Max.
So they don't get ant Alzheimer's?
No. Is that,
no ant wrinkles?
No.
No ant walkers?
What is the lifespan of an ant?
That's a good question that I don't have a... Wait a second.
varies by species?
Probably, but it's one of those things. It's like, how long do they actually live for? I mean, do they even live long enough to age?
Minor worker ants in the study live for roughly 140 days in the laboratory and then drop dead with little apparent cause. It is still unclear how the ants go from healthy, productive members of the colony to stone-cold dead so suddenly. One explanation, says Parker, would be the practice of age polytheism? Not polytheism, polytheism. Found in social insect colonies, worker ants take on different roles as they grow and become more mature, starting out as nursery caretakers when they are young, shifting to hive maintenance in middle age, and are finally pressed into service as foragers and guards, the most dangerous of tasks. An analog to humans, says Parker, would be sending our senior citizens to do the most dangerous tasks in society, as they are the most expendable.
Population control.
Yeah, it would have to be a built-in kill switch for population control so that they don't overgrow their colony to the point of being unsustainable.
So basically, all these ants are playing Logan's Run, the real game.
Yeah. Ooh, nice. Carnival!
No, but this is still... The reason that... I don't know why they did the study, but the reason I find this fascinating is because we don't really see an example of an organism that grows that doesn't exhibit signs of aging, that doesn't get infirm near the end of its lifespan. The fact that it can happen means that maybe it can happen for humans.
Yep. Yeah.
That we can just not age until our lifespan runs out, and then, you know.
And then we're past our warranty expiration date, and we're done.
Does this beg the question, are they just evolutionary? Maybe I'm not saying that, but are they behind us in an evolutionary sense that once upon a time, humans didn't get infirmed before they died because our lifespan was so short that you only got to a certain age?
Yes, but we would have gotten
well,
infirmed.
We've also seen
and you
evidence.
Can still see, and you can still see, even in shorter-lived creatures that don't get, you know, infirmed the way we think of as infirmed, because we get to 70, 80, 90 years old and we basically can't move anymore.
Right.
There's still signs of aging. When we have an organism like this that gets to its adult stage and then basically doesn't change anymore for the rest of its lifespan at all, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
We've also seen evidence in Neolithic hunter communities that you will occasionally, or hunter gatherer communities, you will occasionally have individuals who will reach like 70, 80 years of age.
Right, and they were tended to
because of the hunt or due to intertribal violence.
Disease or all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were tended to. And of course, the theory there is that they were the most knowledgeable.
They were the most revered because they were there the longest.
Because they lived and they knew stuff.
Wow! You mean you didn't die?
We gotta learn from that guy. Protect that guy so we can learn from that guy.
That guy didn't die doing that thing that time.
How did you know not to die? We should probably ask him that.
It's like, well, I always gave that new fruit to the new guy.
I cooked up all my bacon, and I saved all the bacon fat, and that's what I spread on my toast.
There you go.
Bacon fat toast.
Ants, or is it just this particular
I believe it's this particular
one. Yeah, one species of ant, it says.
Okay, I wasn't sure if they had done more tests on different colonies or just that one particular ant.
Phidoldentata, a species of American ant. America.
Found that the minor worker ants showed no declines in fitness or health as they aged. They even improved as they got older. Now that would be awesome.
Right. Yeah,
because I'm telling you, youth is wasted on the young.
Right? It's funny because it's true.
Youth is completely wasted on the young.
Yeah,
okay.
So here's a fun statistic pulled out of this article about humans.
Okay.
After age 30, mortality rates double in humans about every 8 years.
Oh, crap.
A 62-year-old is twice as likely to die as a 56-year-old.
Sniff, sniff.
I didn't need that information.
No. Gosh darn it.
Hold on. Even more, this is a very consistent increase that doesn't slow down until one is around 100 years old. So apparently, if you can make it to 100, your mortality rate will slow down.
Though if you make it to 100, you are guaranteed to get cancer. I forget which kind of cancer it is, but there's one of them that it is a genetic certainty. If you live to 100 years old, you will get it.
You're going
to
have.
What happens?
You might have a few of them by then.
100-year-old cancer.
At 100 years, if you live that long, death just gives up for a while and goes, screw it, I've got more important things to deal with for right now. I'm going to come back to you later.
Abortion babies.
I go deal with someone else.
Death just, pulls the pin on the cancer grenade and just tosses it at you and then walks away for a while.
Yeah. So at that point, your cancer is aged like a fine scotch.
This is the good stuff.
That's nice. I like that idea. Okay, and let's see here. I think we're ready to move along. And there.
Hi, O'Reilly Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us, 470-222-6759. Bye.
Yes, we're still doing the show. There's so much to talk about.
So much.
I know.
There's too much.
Let's sum up.
I didn't even bother bringing in all the articles that I had saved because we just have too much to talk about. It's been a busy week with lots of politics, and because of that, taking up the entire news cycle, other things are just kind of falling by the wayside. So we'll get some older stories in just so that we don't lose them kind of in the grab bag so that we fill it up as we go. But in the good, today I found that an army guy has decided to create, a lieutenant has created his own military-themed Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, boy.
And
let me tell you, it's going to be amazing.
Some of the cards that I saw were delightful. Just delightful. Of course, it's military, so the language is not for the faint of heart. Of course, neither is Cards Against Humanity. So it's there's some great stuff here. It's like, okay, so what really killed Patton? An enraged 300-pound Dependa bellowing, "I serve too," whatever that is. See, I don't even know half these things.
Listen to the military guy crack up.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay.
I'll explain it to you later.
I see how this is going. If my deployment was made into a porno, it would be full of this and this.
PT belts and the bend. Ah.
the bend and reach around, yeah.
What puts the strong in army strong? One of the cards is Fort Bliss Super Meth.
So basically what we're figuring out now is play it with someone who's been in the military so they can explain it to you.
Yeah. with lots of drinks. Friday's safety brief has identified blank as the greatest threat to soldiers. MRE-induced constipation. Lieutenants. Here's my favorite. The good idea fairy.
No, lieutenants.
I'm a fan of breastfeeding in uniform.
There you go. Yeah.
mainly because, well, up until the whole equality thing, how many of those were men?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, God, it hurts.
So first, Lieutenant Matthew Coble received permission from his command to actually develop the game. Good on you, sir.
Good on you, command, for approving it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm looking at the actual Kickstarter for it. It's got 26 days left to go. The original goal was $15,000. They're already over $111,000.
Wow. This is one of those things that I think I'm probably going to have to back.
Probably.
Yeah.
And it's not even like an add-on. It's actually a full, 75 cards plus 225 white cards, if anybody's played Cards Against Humanity. Beyond that, they're also looking, if this makes enough money, which looks like it's going to, part of their money is going to go into making further expansions.
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome. I mean, just... the option for an entire another Cards Against Humanity game that you can play with your, formerly served, veteran friends. Yep. That's awesome.
I would like to get a couple of these and just like go to the VA hospital and just set it on a table and walk away.
I would not walk away. What I would do is I would step back and I would watch the game because while for myself I may not understand every reference that's being involved, just to watch them enjoy every reference that is involved would be phenomenal.
Yeah, I there's also an IT version as well, which was hilarious from my perspective, of course, not necessarily anyone else.
I think I need this.
It's pretty good. So yeah, it's the for $30 you get a 300 card disgruntled deck, which is fantastic. It's custom 2-piece OD green box. And shipping is included, also to APO addresses. So yeah, I think, yeah, continue, and I'm just going to go ahead and pledge. There we go. Okay. So I am part of that, and I will share that as well.
Take my money.
Yes, shut up and take my money. So, and yeah, there we go. Okay, Kickstarter link is also in the show notes. And let's see.
This is one of those things, real quick, where we know how awesome the people that made Cards Against Humanities are, and the title of this is Lieutenant Creates Military Theme Game to Rival Cards Against Humanities. I would not be surprised to see Cards Against Humanities just suck them under the wing and just be like, hey, we'll do whatever we can to help you out and spread this even further.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Fred, if you actually read through the stuff on their actual Kickstarter page, no, he actually, before he went through this, got in contact with the guys for Cards Against Humanity, and they said, we love the idea, yes, let's do it, and they're helping them.
That's nice. See, again, because we know how awesome the people that run Cards Against Humanities are.
They're good. They're good people. In a in a bad people universe, they're good people.
For the IT viewers out there, my IT director has a tattoo of Quippy, an IBM Model M keyboard, and the ASCII of flipping tables.
Nice. Wow. That's hardcore, and I appreciate
that
greatly.
I need this for our next holiday, where it's just the five of us in the office for the IT call.
For the IT cards? All. Yeah. I'll get the link for the IT Cards Against Humanity. I think it's just free, and you just print them out. So, yeah, you could definitely do that. Do that with the company's toner. That'd be the appropriate thing to do, I think. Just to let you know.
Dude, I know how to corporate.
Exactly, yeah. So, so moving along, apparently, you know how we were talking about lab-grown beef? You know, the hamburgers that, they weren't quite right. They need a little more fat. Well, they now have lab-grown meatballs.
Oh.
So it's from a company called Memphis Meats, which is interesting. The company was founded by three scientists, and they want to be the first to sell meat grown from stem cells. They have already grown small amounts using cells harvested from cows, pigs, and chickens, and they expect their products will be ready to enter the market within the next 5 years. Competitors such as Mosa Meats and Modern Meadow Inc. also want to bring lab-grown meat to market within the next few years, says the Wall Street Journal. Memphis Meats co-founder and CEO Uma Valetti, MD, told Fortune he's confident that this is the future of meat. Valetti, a cardiologist, calls this the second domestication. The first occurred 10,000 to 20,000 years ago, and Valetti strongly believes it's time for an update. But instead of domesticating animals to produce meat, Memphis Meats is domesticating cells to farm the meat directly.
I can't wait for my 96-ounce filet mignon.
Yeah, and he's exactly right because, I mean, as delicious as animals are, I love animals. They're all delicious. Yes. As delicious as they are, cultivating livestock for meat is incredibly expensive.
Inefficient.
Yeah, and inefficient when you compare to – when you take into account caloric intake. And this is especially important if, David, we ever get off this rock.
We've got to get off this rock.
Oh, yeah.
If we become space travelers, we're going to have to be vegetarians. We're going to have to because dragging livestock along
it's not going to work.
Is incredibly wasteful. But if we can just grow the meat, then we don't have that problem.
You can also look at the environmental impact and how much water it takes just to raise a herd of cattle or pigs or anything else. It's frightening.
Speaking of that,
it cuts that right out.
Yeah, the company says that its lab-grown meat consumes 90% less water and land and 50% less energy.
And it's true.
And probably produces nearly 100% less methane.
Okay, so let's look at California. None.
Well, there's also the benefit of 100% cultivated meat artists. I'll say artists. Cultivated meat scientists or artists don't take over wildlife refuges. 100% of those people, because domesticated livestock farmers and ranchers tend to be those types.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, the cattle drive for cells is all of what, 2-3 inches maybe?
Yeah, it's
at it, most. Man.
It's from the counter on the back of the lab to the front of the lab. That's about it.
You definitely don't have to worry about paying for your grazing rights.
No, just square footage. I think that's about it. So now let's think about California and the current drought situation, chronic drought situation that they have. And I believe we talked a little bit about it in one of the shows about almond production and how almond production was sucking down, let's be conservative and say 50%, like five times as much water as the entire population of California drinks.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous.
I mean, obviously I'm being a little bit hyperbolistic, but I'm also I think I'm cutting back. I think that's not as much. It's a lot of water. Almost all the water that is pumped out of the aquifers is going to agriculture. So we need to get smarter about that. Cattle is one of those things also that they need water. We need water. They need water. That's just how it goes. And of course, they have to eat the corn and the grass-fed beef and all that. So you got to grow all that, and that's all more agriculture that has to then go into the production of cattle. So, yeah.
I've played devil's advocate a few times already on the show. I'll go ahead and throw one more out.
Okay, what you got?
Right now, you have an organization, PETA.
Mm-hmm.
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And obviously they are... Yes. Individuals that would be against growing and raising animals specifically to slaughter them and make food. Would they also be against not raising those animals specifically to make food because we would no longer need them?
They're going to be against anything no matter what we do, because at this point it's not about the ethical treatment of animals. It's about some piece of crap ideological identity.
Which is where it goes eventually.
But let's assume for a second that they are in any way rational and talk about the actual, moral implications of this. There's no argument here. These meat cells, they don't have a brain. They don't think. They can't feel pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just...
There's
your
nervous system.
Yeah, you're manufacturing direct meat. Yeah.
Didn't you say they're from stem cells?
Yes.
So they're killing babies.
No! That is not the only place that you can get stem cells from.
That was the next direction to take.
Yes.
There's a lot of fetus cells
from the adult human body. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear it.
Now, then it's just, would you like Bob for dinner? Bob, would you like to eat Bob for dinner? When it gets weird.
I'm waiting for the meal where I actually get served myself and I have the sudden realization of, my God,
I'm delicious.
I look forward to that existential.
This is one of those situations where South Park got it right in the beginning. He used stem cells to grow a restaurant.
Where, people didn't just follow movie stars, but they went out of their way to try to get the same diseases that their favorite movie star had.
Oh,
you've seen
dear.
This.
I know exactly
no, I've
what
heard
you're
of it. I haven't
about.
Seen it. Yet.
Oh God.
This is a thing?
And
people are weird.
They also bought cuts of steak made out of cells from their favorite stars. Somebody has dove down this rabbit hole and made
This is not untrodden territory. That's the problem. But
safe cannibalism.
Safe cannibalism.
So yeah. I can order the Deadpool filet mignon?
Well, actually, you know what? You know what's fine with this, though?
Like chimichangas.
Nice. Nice. But you know what's good about this? Because the reason that cannibalism is bad is because of the eating of the brain. Because of those, oh gosh, what were they called?
Prions.
Prions, yes.
Yeah.
Because of prion disease. So, this, no prions, you're just eating filet of Smith.
Yeah.
I love the silence.
There needs to be a better word than weird.
My child mignon.
Well, yeah.
Filet of mignon.
Oh.
Oh, God, that hurts. How?
The best.
Oh my. Okay.
Wow, if you thought people had a problem with baby cows.
Wow. It's amazing. Yeah. Now, think about this. The astronauts that the settlers on foreign worlds, they're going to have to eat each other. It's part of the process. At one point or another.
On those planets, protein is going to be more valuable than gold.
Protein is going to be important.
So a diet of potatoes isn't going to work.
A diet of potatoes will get you maybe a year. And you're going to hate every day of that year.
But if we're capable of just 3D printing a meal.
Yeah. But that meal may be of your fellow astronaut. But it's okay because they're standing there and they're eating a filet of you too.
they may not like the filet of you. They may like the filet of them.
Well, here's the thing, you know, if
that would
if
be a weird thing. I can see the DSM-65 of you know having some really interesting new things like I only eat myself.
Masturbatory meat eating.
Oh my God. Wow.
The human mind is a weird, weird place.
Going places.
It's a weird place.
And never everyone's said
there were
different.
Places anybody wanted to go.
So, yeah.
I think with the astronauts and whatnot, it's going to be possible for them to cryogenically freeze and keep stem cells from all their favorite tasty pork and beef and whatever from back home that they can then thaw out and then produce a meal, which they can then get stem cells from, because we have the science now to revert cells back to stem cell state.
David, it's easy. I'm having an old friend for dinner.
Oh, you are the worst.
Dad joke of the day.
With some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Oh.
The worst.
And on that note, let's have our logical fallacy of the week, the burden of proof. You said that the burden of proof lies not with the person making the claim, but with someone else to disprove. The burden of proof lies with someone who is making a claim and is not upon anyone else to disprove. The inability or disinclination to disprove a claim does not render that claim valid, nor give it any credence whatsoever. However, it is important to note that we can never be certain of anything, and so we must assign value to any claim based on the available evidence, and to dismiss something on that basis that hasn't been proven beyond all doubts is also fallacious reasoning. Example, Bertrand declares that a teapot is, at this very moment, in orbit around the sun between the Earth and Mars, and that because no one can prove him wrong, his claim is therefore a valid one. Yeah.
Sounds legit.
You can't prove it wrong.
I'm sure one of the Mercury astronauts threw that sucker.
This is always the weirdest logical fallacy to me, because on the one hand, yes, it makes perfect sense, but on the other hand, technically speaking, in scientific terms, you can't prove anything. You can only find examples that disprove it.
That's right.
So it's just weird.
Yeah, but basically it's the case of you're so convinced by your own argument that you are not allowed to – you're not allowing yourself to – have it disproven. So you just make the assertion that it is so without any evidence. So basically, for those of you out there in internet land, let's try to be reasonable. Have real good reasons for why you believe things, why you trust this, things like that. Yeah, do what you can.
And hold those that argue against your reasoning to also have good reasoning why they argue against it.
Yeah, wouldn't help if they're held accountable. Now, I'm thinking here that we're just about going long on the show. So
business as usual.
Business as usual, yes. But we're having an awful lot of fun talking about, you know, cannibals in space. things of that nature. And I think I may have to change the title of the show.
Cannibals in Space?
I think I just found it. Cannibals in Space.
Yeah.
If there are cannibals in space, they would want a teapot circling so that they had have a beverage tea available time. To them.
Right?
Bertrand's tea time, cannibals in space. Oh, dear. All of this is interesting. So, anyway, let's get into the heart of really why we were gathered here today.
We are gathered here today.
It is election time. Yes. okay. So
primaries.
Steve and I hope you're still. Primaries. I hope you're still awake out there, because this.
What, huh?
Wait, yeah. Sure. Wake up. Somebody get the electroshock. Okay. All right. Now, so we had the Iowa caucus, and it was a real nail biter there for a while because
that was exciting, and to have somebody in politics actually say something's exciting is well for most people oxymoron, but no, I was glued.
It was ridiculous.
Hold on, let me get a coin, and we can decide if it was exciting or not.
Oh, you bastard! But you cut right to the heart of the matter, so that. It was not really a big deal on the GOP side. In fact, it was basically split three ways, and everybody else kind of got the dregs from the table. The only real surprise was that it was not a walk-away victory for Donald Trump.
Who threw a temper tantrum because
he
didn't.
Always throws a temper tantrum. It's kind of his shtick.
Yeah, so, he didn't win, therefore it was a conspiracy.
Yeah, he's actually thinking about suing the Iowa yeah. committees. So.
Yeah, somehow.
Yeah, because, he's Trump.
And despite the fact that it was a three-way race on the Republican side, Cruz won by like 3%. So compared to the Democratic side, that was a runaway.
Yeah, that's true. So on the Democrat side, Hillary beat out Bernie by 0.3%.
That was 0.2.
No, 0.3 was the final.
The final ended up being 0.3.
I watched it for like an hour.
It was five votes, wasn't it?
0.2, 0.3.
It was not many votes. Yeah, it was under 10 actual votes in between them.
Yeah, I thought it was like 700 to 695 or something like is what I saw. Yeah, but again, I may not have seen the final
tally. I thought it was like 669 to like 667.
Any way you look at it, it was stupidly close.
Really, really narrow. Now, from the Bernie camp.
For a non-electable man.
Right. Yeah, from the completely unelectable, fairly secular Jewish Democratic Socialist from the Bronx. Yeah. yeah, completely unelectable. Yeah. So what was interesting was the Bernie camp, really all they were shooting for was to get within 5% of her.
The margin of error.
Yeah.
They made it.
Boy, howdy, did they. So essentially, this is a victory for Bernie Sanders, even though, of course, everybody's going to say, he didn't win, so how can it be a victory?
Well, it's a victory for him because it proves to all the people who were going to vote for him anyway, who wanted to vote for him but were going to vote for Hillary because they thought he wasn't electable, mm-hmm. is like, no, he's totally electable. Look how close he came, even with all your naysaying. Get out and vote for him when it's your state's turn.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I mean, I had seen some of the polls and some of the talking heads come out about what Hillary camp is saying. Yeah, she's going to blow this away easily with, 20% above Bernie, and it's going to be this thing. This shows Hillary's camp and everything else know this, as you said, Democratic Socialist Jew from the Bronx is actually kind of a frightening thing in their corners coming after them. And having seen bits from the debate last night, he's a bulldog who's not letting up.
Yeah, it's almost like the last time we had a Democratic Socialist, we elected him three times.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the key thing here is actually...
Stop reminding them about FDR.
I am never going to stop reminding people about FDR because, as far as I'm concerned, he was our greatest president ever.
I'm not going to disagree with that.
He did more for this country in his term than anyone else. He set us up for 50 years of prosperity, unparalleled growth in this country, and it's all because of FDR's policies.
I can't disagree with that.
And in the last 24 years, we've had mostly Republicans.
Yeah. Ever since Reagan.
Thanks, Obama.
Ever since Reagan, we've been on the Republican hyper conservative trickle down greed disguised as patriotism train.
Voodoo-nomics.
Yeah.
Voodoo-nomics. That's
The thing is, the phrase voodoo economics, the most hilarious thing about that is that was coined by Reagan's actual economics advisor about his economic policies.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Why am I not surprised?
And George H.W. Bush called him out on his voodoo economics. And then there was a period of time there where nobody could find the tape of that. So he just swore up and down that he never called trickle-down economics voodoo economics. And there's also a funny video where I think it was NBC was like, challenge accepted. We found the video.
Yeah. It's greed disguised as patriotism. That's all it is. And Republicans have been just shoving it down our throats ever since Reagan, and it obviously doesn't work considering our economy has collapsed once already.
At some point, I will take your point, Michael, and if Andy actually allows me, I will take the Chicago School of Economics to task on this show, but that's a show in and of itself.
Yeah.
That is a show in and of itself. Maybe we should start to just have specials.
Well, one of the things
I'm okay with that.
One of the things that I found interesting and mind-boggling at the same time, talking to people who are, staunchly left, but also staunchly Hillary, is one of the biggest things is they think that Bernie's just so far off the deep end left wing that we can't possibly elect this guy. He'll never get anything done. Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, dude, we have been the apple cart and the horses have been going solidly right for so long that
you have no idea where the center is anymore.
I don't think you know where center is. You think center is somewhere over there when he's really not as liberal as you think he is.
Well, yeah, also, David, you bring up that good point. I've actually seen whole charts done that show where people sit on the economic spectrum, or the political spectrum, left, right, libertarian, authoritarian, etc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, Hillary, which is hailed as this, great liberal person by people on both sides, sadly.
She's on the right.
She's very fairly middle right. She's not even centrist right. She's middle right.
No, Obama's centrist right.
Bernie is actually just outside of centrist left. But because Hillary's the one being shown as this great liberal, when the actual liberal comes around, he looks like a Looney Tune.
And that's that's the Republicans' fault because they're so far off to the right, they're getting into the spectrum of, totalitarian regimes.
It's not only just so far off to the right. Here's where I saw one of my major criticisms against Obama is he allowed the GOP to drag him right even more than he was initially. Because he was so far into compromising with a group that will not compromise.
Yeah.
That was Clinton.
Well, actually, that brings me to something that another friend of the show had posted. It's fairly long, so I'm going to kind of butcher it a little bit. But Dan Finke, our philosophy professor friend, who showed up on one of our previous shows, he had a pretty long take on basically the state of where we are politically. He said from 1968 to 1988, the Republicans had won 5 out of 6 presidential contests, which means that in 1992, the president was a Republican for 20 of the last 24 years, and each of the last 12. And going all the way back to 1951 and the inauguration of post-FDR Truman era, the Democrats had only 12 years in presidential power. The last Democratic president resided in a period that he himself infamously called a malaise for the country. The historic gains of LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, the Great Society, and civil rights legislation had led to a right-wing backlash that had persisted for 2.5 decades, and only let up briefly after the scandal plagued Nixon administration, and then resumed another 4 years later. The Democrats did at least continue to hold the House solidly this entire time, but the presidency was a Republican stranglehold. It goes on and on and on, dismantling basically the history of how we got to be here, which is one of
it's a good read.
Which is one of those things that this show kind of likes to do. It's like, how did we get here? How did this happen?
But I think that there's it's an interesting thing to note that we've been the Republican strategy of absolutely no compromise and as hard right as you can possibly go is working. They're dragging the entire country towards their preferred system of government, and there has not been a counterbalanced drag to the left.
Mm-hmm.
The response from the left has been to compromise, because that's the way the government's supposed to work, is we're supposed to find some middle ground. The middle ground has moved
to conservaland. And that's why we need Bernie, because he knows better. He knows you can't compromise with these people. With a zealot.
Well, no, I would debate that. The thing is, the difference between most of the GOPers out there and Bernie is the fact that Bernie realizes that compromise is not a dirty word. Compromise is actually how politics gets done.
Yeah.
But unlike, I will say, hardcore, unlike Obama, Bernie will not compromise unless there is compromise on the other side as well. Not just this little token crap, but actual meaningful compromise.
Well, yeah, that I should have been clearer. He knows that you cannot that a zealot will not compromise unless you force them to. So he's not going to be dragged into this situation where he's not actually getting anything for his quote unquote compromise.
True.
And, well, here's the other part of it is, I think that we need somebody who is very far left to say, these are the things that I want, and force them into a situation where they have to give up what they want in order to meet him somewhere.
Yeah, someone who is not going to give them what they want unless he gets something in return. Or someone who
knows how to negotiate, which is you never negotiate starting from the point of this is what I want. You negotiate starting from the point of way over here of ideological, I would love to have all of these things. But you're willing to lose to the point of you getting what you want. You don't start with the bare minimum.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that that's one of the core differences between the GOP and the Democrats in this day and age, is that the Democrats start with, hey, I've made some pre-concessions to deal with you guys, versus, say, starting way over here and then saying, all right, well, drag me back to the middle and I'll drag you back to the middle, and somewhere we'll find something that we both like.
Yeah, that is definitely my number one complaint about the Democratic Party, is they start out. Their starting position in negotiation is already giving concessions. That should never be your starting position in a negotiation. Your starting position should be what you want if you get your way 100%.
Again, the perfect example for this is, for those people who out there who remember, is when the sequester came down.
Oh, yeah.
And there was this massive debate and massive negotiation all over that. And Obama finally came out and said, all right, we've got a bipartisan bill for the sequester. Okay, everything's good, everything else. And then almost immediately after, John Boehner, at that point Speaker of the House, comes out and says, I got 95% of what I wanted. That's not compromise.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. I don't think that we can really argue that point. Because it's just manifest.
Well, there's also, I mean, it's very easy to decry the Democrats for not knowing how to compromise or not compromising effectively. And
you guys are muted, Andy.
No.
Are we now?
No, it was just a hiccup.
Better now.
It's very easy to decry the Democrats for not knowing how to compromise or not compromising effectively. And it's very easy to go at the Republicans and say, well, you know, they're dragging everybody to the right. But it doesn't help that the Democrats are killing themselves, like the DNC, who are clearly pulling for one individual, when you have a more logical choice, or you have someone like Hillary who is clearly sitting to the right center and the DNC is pushing for her to win. You know, shouldn't they be equally giving their attention to either candidate? You know, it's harder for those left-leaning individuals in the Democratic Party to get their points across, to try and get any ground in the party.
Well, that's one of those systemic – if we're realistic here, Debbie Wasserman Schultz used to be Hillary Clinton's campaign manager in previous election.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what did – you know, I hate to be this guy, but, yeah, what did you expect was going to happen here?
And also
with
let's –
Debbie Wasserman Schultz at the helm of the DNC.
Yeah, of course, because she's playing favorites, which is the stupid thing to do.
Well, let's also look at Bernie,
though. Political thing to do.
Well,
and it's happening on the GOP side as well.
Yes, and it's happening on the GOP side, and look at what it's doing to the Republican Party. It's destroying the party. They are in trouble.
Well,
they like to put on a brave face.
They
but
were
they
in trouble
in
long
trouble.
Before this, though. When the Tea Party was born, that was the little sliver.
I strongly disagree. I think when the Tea Party was born, they were actually in a very strong position. Because they didn't have these caricatures as their front runners. They had people who
came out of the Tea Party.
That's it.
No,
yeah.
But see, that's the thing. At the time, they had strong front runners who presented good faces, who even though they were evil, didn't look insane. And
right.
Now they do have people who look insane.
Right. Because they
invented
themselves
in.
Because they brought the Tea Party to prominence.
Because
and they
because
did it
they
as
didn't,
a campaign stunt, even
because
though
they
didn't
played,
need to.
Because they played favorites, and suddenly they've got maniacs in their face.
It wasn't because they played favorites.
It was absolutely because they played
favorites.
It was because their poster children could do no wrong, and they let them mouth off to whatever. And now look at the trouble there.
Koch brothers invention. That wasn't a GOP RNC.
The GOP has been run by the Koch brothers since they made their millions. We know this is true.
They've just been buying votes.
They have
absolutely.
A lot of backers. It's not just those two guys. They have a ton of backers that they have to listen.
They've got a lot of powerful backers,
and their other backers listen to them.
They've got a lot of backers that are also in the dark money, campaigns where they will have.
Who's the biggest of the dark money backers?
They have entire countries backing the RNC.
Yeah, well, as much as the GOP is the snake that's eating itself, totally understand that. Obviously, we've seen it and we've commented on it ad nauseum, and we will continue to do so until it changes. But with Bernie, he is an outsider. He came in as an independent. He's not a Democrat. He's an independent. Has been for his entire tenure in the House. So, why do they want him? Why would they want to back him in the first place? He's also not taking any political action money. They can't buy him off to get any loyalty out of him. So he's come in as an independent. He's interloping on their turf. And they can't pay him. They can't buy him. They can't influence him in any way.
He's a very
anti-establishment candidate.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting dichotomy. It's almost the same vein as Trump, but on the light side of the force.
That's it exactly. We've got Obi-Wan versus Darth Vader here.
Yoda.
Because Trump is the master puppeteer. Who's spent his life and career pulling the strings of politicians to get legislation that helps him in his business.
Yeah.
And now he wants to come out of the shadows and be the front dude. Bernie on the other side of the coin is let's do what's right for the people of this country because they're the ones who sign my paychecks. And they're the only ones that I will accept money from.
Well, no, it's not even that they're the ones that sign my paychecks.
He also has genuine compassion for people.
Yeah.
Which gives
a crap.
A rare trait in Washington, it seems.
Well, he's had the history of backing the civil rights movement and going to jail for being at protests. So that's not the kind of guy that's really worried about the paycheck for what he's doing.
Well, you also see that, you look at Bernie's speeches, you look at his time on the floor of the House and the Senate, you look at things he said as far back as the 80s, 70s. I've seen some of his speeches and interviews, and I see political candidates nowadays, Hillary being a perfect example of that, of most of the GOP, they jump on the hot, the cool, the trendy thing to hop on. Like, okay, gay rights. Okay, that's trendy now. I was against it before, but it's trendy now, so I'm all for it. Women's rights.
evolving to the situation. Yeah.
Bernie has always been, from the beginning, he said, no, these are the problems, and he has still been crusading against them from back in the 70s and 60s to today.
Yeah.
If we want the United Federation of Planets, we need Bernie.
Yep.
Well, we need Bernie.
When you can see the problems coming in the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. and you continue to campaign against them through the 80s and 90s, and then when the turn of the century comes and you are still going in there, voting, staying the same course that you've been since when you were marching with Martin Luther King. I mean, there's no possible way you can look at that and look at his policies and be like, oh, well, you know.
He's just pandering.
Yeah. Why would I listen to what he's saying now?
We have to catch up to Bernie. Now,
yeah,
I won't begrudge.
That's it. Yeah, we had to catch up to him.
I do not begrudge politicians who come into new information and change their mind or change their stance on something.
Yeah.
You know, it is healthy to grow. But when you have somebody who has a 30-year history of having gotten it right in the first place, that's the kind of guy I want.
Well, yeah. I agree. When it comes down to somebody getting new information and then changing their mind because of that, I'm all for that. The problem is that is something that I have rarely, rarely seen in politics.
You don't see it. That's the problem.
It happens on the left. And then they get accused of waffling.
Yeah. It happens on the left
occasionally.
It happens more often on the left than the right.
I agree with that for times it occurs, but it's also when it typically occurs, it's typically more minor people in the different parties, and so it's very rarely covered.
Mm-hmm.
They get called out on it more often.
Yeah.
And it's the weirdest thing because it's a black mark against them, and nobody has actually effectively said, well, you waffled on the stance. Yeah, well, I had more information when I made my second decision on this.
Well, it's not. They don't even ever go that route. They end up tripping over their own feet when they're trying to explain why they do.
Change your stance on this? And the only reason I can come up with why it took them so long to change their stance and why they couldn't adequately explain how they changed their stance is because it was just money.
Well, beyond that, going back to the whole idea, it's. I watched part of the debate last night, and you always see politicians, they're brought up with especially like voting records, like, well, you voted for this, but now you say it's a bad thing. Why did you change your mind? Or, you know, what do you say about that? You see a lot of politicians tend to waffle a lot about that back and forth. And I watched Bernie, you know, when Hillary addressed him directly about voting for basically saying yes to the thing that brought down the housing crisis on the United States. And he just straight up, as he's had a tendency to do, just straight up came and go, no, that was a mistake. I made a mistake doing that. I'm sorry. I apologize for it. There was no scandal, no trying to waffle or weasel around it or make it sound good. He was like, no, I screwed up. And just left it at that.
The direct approach.
The reason that he's a great candidate is because he knows he's not perfect, and when he screws up, he says it. No, I just screwed up.
He owns up to his faults. You know,
which is
genuine.
An admirable leadership quality to have.
And to correct them as quickly as possible.
And we've somehow been brainwashed into this idea that it's not.
Well, it's
America. We're willing to learn from mistakes and then grow past them. Not somebody who says, well, this is what I believe. Well, here's a whole bunch of studies that disprove what you believe. Yeah, well,
no,
here's what
I
believe.
No,
well, let me – I want to point something out. Our show here has errata as the very first section.
Mm-hmm.
In most media – it's page 3 at best. Any corrections or anything are a complete afterthought. I want to get things right, so if I screw up, tell me. And I want to get it out of the way as quickly as possible. That's the Bernie Sanders approach too.
Yeah.
You know, let's get it done. Let's move along. You know, that's not what we need to talk about. We need to talk about the other things. Let's get that done and let's move on.
That's in most media. That's not how it works in politics, and I'll give you the example.
In politics, they don't talk
about it. There's no errata at all, and I'll give you the example.
There's thousands of examples of why it doesn't work in politics.
But most recently, the situation with the sailors in Iran and being held and detained, and Obama calls and apologizes, hey, maybe we shouldn't have been in those waters. We'll go and get them back. We get them back, and then he's decried as being a wuss because he called and apologized for something that we did wrong.
Yep.
Now he's decried as this wuss by the right because America can do no wrong to them, which is a dumb, dumb way to approach international politics.
And I should have explained that better, that it was the right.
Because other countries' Republicans aren't buying your goddamn propaganda.
Well,
they're not.
Well, they're warmongers.
There's a secondary,
they want us to be in war.
Other countries' Republicans are our liberals.
Well, there's a secondary motivation for the right wing as well in decrying that, oh, he's weak because he apologized, blah, blah, blah. And that is to deflect from the fact that...
That it worked?
That, yeah, it was successful.
That it was successful. That he, you know, engaged in diplomacy.
That you
and didn't start a war needlessly and put American lives at risk and got everybody back within, what, 24, 48 hours?
That the pen actually is mightier than the sword?
Right?
Yeah, which does nothing for the military-industrial complex.
It lasts less than nothing.
That's the last thing they want.
It's amazing what happens when you engage in the ancient and arcane practice of diplomancy.
Diplomancy. I see what you did there, and I approve. Okay, so...
Without sin, throw the first stone. Unless you're Merca.
Yeah, well... So, given that that is also one of those things that was added to the Bible after the fact, I think that, you know, we rewrite history all the time. Just look at Texas.
Well, so. Right, Republican Jesus is a prick, I gotta tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, don't vote for that guy. Don't vote for that guy. Okay.
He's the worst.
Total worst. So, other fallout, let's see. Mike Huckabee dropped out of the race.
I think he should be forced to carry it to full term.
That was phenomenal.
That was
the best tweet.
That
was
yes, it was.
Best tweet.
That really was the best. Also, Rand Paul decided that he was no longer fit to continue. Another one that we should probably... Oh, that's just... The libertarian guy.
But, but apparently Ben Carson isn't out. And if you say he is and then go on to win, it's dirty pool.
Ben Carson is a funny guy. I do have one other thing to say about Ben Carson, because as he's been on, I'm going to scare quote, campaign trail, because really all he's doing is selling books, as far as I can tell. This is like a victory lap kind of thing, just onto the book sales. That's all he's doing. And he's cashed out like this before.
Yeah.
Where he just kind of stopped campaigning and went to sign some books. He's done this before. It's like, he's gone. He was just getting his books. Well, now he's just going to keeping it up. But he did have something that I absolutely have to address that he said. And that is that people who advocate for the separation of church and state have schizophrenia.
Guilty.
Or, you know, realism.
Yeah.
So our founding fathers all had schizophrenia.
Yeah.
That explains so much.
Talking points, man.
Yeah, yeah. So
white Republican Jesus talking points.
Let's see, separation of church and state. You can't put anything up that has anything to do with God, certainly nothing to do with Jesus Christ. And, you know, I'll have a seizure if I see a cross and that kind of crap, you know?
What?
No, I don't know.
Things that he's said.
Could you please go back to talking about pyramids as grain silos?
Is that a severe, real condition? Does he actually have seizures when he sees a cross? Is that... He might want an exorcism.
I don't know if that's him having the seizures or...
Cross, clearly you're a vampire.
Okay, now I know it's a little late in the show, but I think we're going to listen to Dr. Sleepy for just a second.
Oh, no.
Let's see, where's... Give me some volume here.
It has insinuated itself with all of these regulations. 81,000 pages of new regulations last year. And look at what that cost us. You know, almost $2 trillion, $24,000 per family of four. That happens to be also the poverty level for a family of four. So if you want to fight poverty, why not get rid of some of all these regulations? You know, that, I think, makes a whole lot more sense than anything else. And then, you know, I have a lot more to say, but I'm going to wrap it up here by simply saying we Americans must... be proud of who we are. We cannot give away our values and principles for the sake of political correctness. And, you know, there are those...
Here we go. And, you know, there are those...
There are those who go around proclaiming separation of church and state. You can't put anything up that has anything to do with God, certainly nothing to do with Jesus Christ. And, you know, I'll have a seizure if I see a cross, and all this kind of crap, you know. The fact of the matter is, do they realize that our founding document, the Declaration of Independence, says we have certain unalienable rights given to us by our Creator, a.k.a. God. That the Pledge of Allegiance says we are one nation under God. Most courtrooms on the wall, it says, in God we trust. Every coin in our pocket, every bill in our wallet says, in God we trust. If it's in our founding documents, it's in our pledge, in our courts, and it's on our money, but we're not supposed to talk about it. What in the world is that? In medicine, we call it schizophrenia. And doesn't that explain a lot of what's going on in our nation?
Okay, that's...
Are you kidding me?
That's first bad all, medicine on what schizophrenia is!
Oh, jeez!
First of all, that's not the definition of schizophrenia. You're not a psychologist. Shut your mouth.
Whoa.
Second of all this stuff wasn't on the money or in the Declaration until Reagan came around.
Goddamn communist scare!
It was McCarthyism. Yeah, McCarthyism, 1956. So,
but beyond that, if I may comment, having listened to certain sections that I haven't heard before, I loved his point about fighting poverty by getting rid of regulation. And all I thought of was the idea of Flint, Michigan, going, okay, so we're going to poison and kill everybody who's below a certain socioeconomic level.
And well, get rid of that poverty.
Well,
technically, that does end poverty.
I mean, if they're all dead, then no one's suffering, right?
Well, it
rains.
Well, you know, they... The Republicans really haven't come up with a real good health care alternative to Obamacare. Maybe
they don't have
their
one.
Their alternative is letting everyone die.
I think
their
it's purposely make them all
get sorted out,
yeah,
with no regulations whatsoever.
Yeah.
Which benefits large insurance companies and large hospitals and their profit margins.
Yeah, solely. Okay, so Kate had something for me. What is this? If the media had been fair in their coverage of Bernie, the numbers at Iowa would have been different. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's markedly so. I was getting...
And I think that goes along with the DNC topic and those type of things. I mean, they're not covering him the same way they're covering Hill Dog because they clearly want that next step from black president to woman president, and that wild-haired Jew scares them. It's just another old white man, and they're not listening to what he's saying.
You know, here's the thing is, they're missing a fantastic opportunity here. Instead of fighting over it, if Hillary just agreed to be his VP for 8 years and then slide into the president's slot for 8 years after that, they would crush. A Sanders-Clinton ticket...
They would crush.
Would helicopter spin break the back of the
Never
GOP
gonna happen.
Over
they,
their knee?
They mentioned that.
In
that
election.
Would take a level of humility that I'm not sure she possesses currently.
Well, it was actually mentioned. That question was asked in that last town hall debate that we just had 2 days ago. Yeah, it was Tuesday. And it was not... It was not met with a rousing support on either side, really. But what Bernie said was that, you know, it was just too early to determine that. So basically, look, choose one of us, and then we'll figure it out. However, however, Hillary did state that the very first thing that she was going to do after getting the nomination was to consult with Bernie about his thoughts on the matter. And I found that interesting. And... I've seen her consistently adopt all of his policies throughout this entire campaign.
The very first thing I'm going to do after winning the nomination is ask the person who should have got the nomination how I should run my presidential campaign.
That's pretty much exactly what she said.
Most people probably didn't pay attention to Bernie before this whole thing started, but I remember when he was considering joining the race, and literally his whole point initially for joining the race was to drag Hillary to the left. It wasn't to even try to win the presidential nomination.
Yeah,
no, that's very true.
It's working.
It's working.
No, now he's actually being president. I'm all for that.
Yeah, it's certainly working.
And if he was going to choose a woman as his vice president, let's go Elizabeth Warren and not Hillary Clinton.
No,
Warren in the White House.
No, I would not want to see her as vice president. I would not want to see her as president. She has too much power in the Senate. Leave her in the Senate.
I do appreciate all of the work that she's doing there. Yes, I do appreciate
that.
And
we need all the senators we can get right now because it's so evenly split.
Yeah.
Again, it's the main problem I had with Obama when he grabbed Biden.
Yeah.
Biden had power. Biden was actually doing stuff, and making him vice president basically neutered him.
It's true. It is kind of a weak position in
crazy Uncle Biden.
It's but the weakest of the most powerful positions.
Unless you're a Republican, and then you can shoot some dude in the face while you're hunting. And
Katie's got a bomb drop here. I would love to see Obama in SCOTUS.
I agree with that. Actually, that might happen. Like to see him.
I've heard that a couple of times. I think we brought that up at one point because we were discussing whether or not he could do it based off of his background, and then we realized that there are no requirements for SCOTUS. Yeah, anybody. None of that.
And he also is a constitutional scholar. He has taught constitutional law. I mean, there's probably no better candidate, technically.
And there's precedent for it.
Yeah.
There certainly is.
There is precedent for it, for a president becoming a SCOTUS. It's possible. It is so possible, but not if it's a GOP electorate.
Well, no, they're going to continue to put Bible thumpers in there who are going to things like...
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, it's
like
bad.
Say rape is the victim's fault, things like that.
Yeah, lots of.
We'll have another if they maintain control of the House and Senate, we'll have another government shut down within the next 8 years.
Yeah,
At least one.
We saw all of this with Clinton, all of it, and it just wash, rinse, repeat, but more extreme each go around.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we need to get off this train.
Well, And this is going back to that whole thing of, why the Democratic Party needs Bernie is that the Democratic Party needs to stop giving in.
And yeah, they need to drag the horse back on track.
Yeah, and if he is their front man, he will not tolerate the GOP doing their, if I don't get my way, I'm going to take my ball and go home act.
Yeah.
Again, the problem is
shut down the government. You looked stupid 3 times before doing it. Look stupid 4.
Yeah.
You bring up the point going back to Clinton era, before they had the Bush and the Reagan era, where the GOP would still play ball and play nice basically with the Democrats who were in control of everything, and the Democrats who were in the House and the Senate were expecting that same, tete-a-tete.
Didn't get it.
Yeah, when Clinton came in and that they went no, and it's just gotten worse since.
Okay. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, and of course our esteemed guest in the panel. We have really run long.
As per usual.
Well, we also started a little late, but
sure.
What we came here to at least touch on was more about the process, and next Tuesday is the New Hampshire primary. So we should discuss that a little bit before we call it a night. So it's a primary, not a caucus. We discussed what a caucus is. A caucus being basically a big party where everybody jumps in a barn and goes to your corner to support your candidate over and over and over again. And then when it's super ties, you get it solved by a coin flip, and then you get the excess delegates from there. Now, with the Iowa caucus, it was not a winner-take-all scenario, so each one of them ended up with 22
I think it was
delegates.
22 versus 21 delegates.
20, yeah, it was, as they 23 said...
23 versus 21 because of the superdelegates.
Oh, because of the superdelegates?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the superdelegates can do what they please, so we can't really count them either. Sure. So, really, it ended up being like 20-22. So, even for being so freaking close, only a couple votes, because of the coin flips for those excess numbers, because so many people showed up to support the process, they were overflowing out of the building. They were just mobbed. They simply did not have the ability to deal with it.
They ran out of registration forms.
They were having to do it on little slips of paper. That they lost like 60 people in between first vote and second vote. They just went missing. I mean, there are some crazy things that go on. But the thing is, every time there was a call to like, we need a recount. It's not that kind of system, folks. You have to put all those people back in the building to do it again. That's not happening. That's simply not happening. Yeah. So you can't do a recount at a caucus. It's over. It's done. Move along. So it's basically, it was Bernie's win in the esoteric, oh, look, not a contender, huh? Yeah, look at me now. What do you think of me now going to New Hampshire? where they love me.
Come with a knife edge.
Yeah. So it was a big win for that when the people in the Hillary camp are like, oh God, what happened? That this this was supposed to be a shoe-in.
Well, this was supposed to be a landslide, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up the additional point. You talked about more people coming out.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we need President Sanders is because he'll make Election Day a national holiday, at which point the GOP loses their shit.
Yeah, because they don't want that to
completely
happen.
Changes their game.
Well, they like to have their ways of making that kind of thing shut down.
We've discussed the national holiday, you know, voting day is a national holiday before. And even going back just one step before that with the more people coming out, hopefully that is a sign of things to come.
Record numbers of people that were signing up to vote that day. Because that was one of the interesting things about the Iowa caucus.
In a primary.
Yes.
Yeah. Those people, like, I don't know what the numbers are, but a really good percentage of them, brand new voters, they registered to vote that day.
Yeah.
When they showed up, they registered to vote.
When I started getting into politics in college,
so many
people in these new voting demographics who even know to go out.
Mm-hmm. It's obscured. It's purposely obscured. Okay. Who is lagging? Is it Mike?
It's Mike. Mike is freezing.
I see. To me, all of y'all are lagging.
Well, so,
hear Andy, but you were like this.
Yeah, we were still rolling. Your connection was freezing a little bit, but it's okay. So. With that, we can wrap up the caucus. We know what the caucus is. It's weird. It's antiquated. The yokels seem to love it.
It's only 11 states, so maybe in the future we can get away from that. But
my favorite thing to come out of all of this was a simple and effective device for counting caucus votes, and it was literally those turnstiles you go through at theme parks and subways and stuff like that to count how many people go through, and you just put a picture of the person you want to support and just count how many people go through.
Yep.
That was done? I didn't see that.
It was a Photoshop picture.
Oh, it would have been great.
That would have actually worked.
Oh, my God. I was like, this is the most brilliant and stupid thing I've ever seen.
Instead, it was like, you know, getting a crowd of people, and it's like, okay, everybody yell your support for this candidate.
Bernie.
And whichever one's louder, you know, that kind of thing. And we've seen how that totally doesn't work. But it's a mess, and it makes our country kind of a laughingstock, which, you know, just one more nail in our coffin or something like that. Doesn't matter.
More on the list.
Yeah, just another thing in the list. So, Ren, is there anything that you are unclear of that you think that we need to address about the Iowa caucus?
No.
Okay.
No,
so
I'm pretty solid on the caucus.
Okay. So now we're moving into a primary. Now the primary it's basically just a regular old vote. It's closed or it's open. So either when I say closed or open, that means that either if it's open, anybody, regardless of party, can come in and vote for the candidate that they choose. If it's closed, then it's only the people that are registered. Like Florida has a closed primary, so you have to register in the party to vote for who the party is going to pick. Then there's the semi-open closed. It's weird. But
New Hampshire actually is a semi-closed primary.
New Hampshire is? Okay, so I'm not clear on that.
Okay, absolutely. A semi-closed primary is kind of a closed primary in the fact of, are you a Republican? Okay, you are voting for the Republican ticket. Here's the Republican candidates, you vote for whoever you want. Same thing if you are a registered Democrat, you are voting for them. If you are registered as anything else, you are third party, you are independent, you're anything else, you can go in and go, you know, here's my voter information, but I want to vote for these guys. So you're allowed a choice as to who to vote for.
So as long as you're registered as an independent, you have free reign.
Yes.
So that's the semi.
It's better than a closed system, but not quite as free as an open.
There we go. Okay. So that's how it's going to operate. It's pretty straightforward. Have I missed anything? Is there some weird catch-22 in there that's just so screwed up that we're going to have a whole big surprise?
Not yet. I mean, we haven't gotten to Florida yet. But that's going to be a while.
Well, I'm not talking swing states or the serious purple states that can't make up their mind about whatever's going on.
The swing standard states, how votes are going to go down, it's a fairly straightforward process.
Yeah, the process is what we're focusing on today because, well, we're not in New Hampshire, or at least nobody on this panel is.
Yeah, and the swing states don't really come into as much consideration during the primary as they do during the election, right. Mainly because we're a closed state and a swing state, so it's not like I can influence Republican or Democrat. I'm going to be voting Democrat. That's where my influence goes.
Yeah. Now, with New Hampshire and Iowa, the only reason they're important is because they're first and second. Mm-hmm. Well, the first caucus and the first primary. That's why they're important. Because they build the momentum for the candidates.
Unless.
And they also slim the herd a little bit.
Unless you're in the GOP, in which case winning the Iowa caucus has currently been a death now.
Yeah. Oh, and we forgot to mention that, that Martin O'Malley also decided to, withdraw from the race. So it truly is just Bernie and Hillary. That's it.
Well, he did his work to try to be in line as VP.
And I think he would be a good choice.
Yeah, I think he's done well on that.
He'd be a good choice for that fairly neutered position.
Yeah.
Good front man for it.
Well, in all the debates I've seen him in, he's pretty neutered now.
There you go. And very true. I mean, that's
one of those things where I'd love to see Hilldog and Sanders on the same ticket. Because, dear God, the debates... If she goes up against their JV,
Hilldog
Sarah Palin,
the stain.
Oh,
the
that's
stain
just,
that would be left.
That would
why,
hurt to
why
watch.
Would you, that? Yeah, that's just painful. That
I just want to see them die.
That would be delicious.
I don't
that,
think it would be painful
see,
at all. I would enjoy
see
the hell out of that.
Politician on live national TV, literally wiping sweat off his forehead.
That's like cherry bomb versus tactical nuke.
Demolish do it.
I mean, just that's the level of competency.
I want them to actually, honest to God, say I was told there would be no math.
Oh, jeez.
I just want to see that happen.
Oh God. Okay. All right. So, what do we need to know? We need to know how many delegates they actually need to pick up here. So, they got 20, 22, respectively. Yeah. So, Stephen, how many delegates do they actually need to win the nomination?
Here's where things get interesting. Because,
well, it's going to get weird. Yeah.
You've been waiting for this question, haven't you?
Refreshing my brain and doing research, I learned some more interesting facts, such as both parties have their own set of numbers. There is not, okay, this is the number we all agree on. It's, okay. The total number of delegates the Democrats have across the entire United States at this point is about 4,051. For GOP, that number is 2,346. So going off on a very interesting start.
Why
so
is that
they
different?
Have half as many?
They have more that, representatives.
Because the party itself sets down and figures out how, using their own interesting math equation. And I'm not even going to get into what that is because that made my brain hurt.
I got it. Physics. The Republicans are trying to use math, and that's a science, and they don't believe in science, so they don't know how to use it.
God told them.
But the way it breaks down is in order to win the party nomination, you need a total of half plus one. So for the Democrats, it would be 2,026 delegates voting for pick a candidate. So, and if that candidate has that many delegates who vote for them at the national convention, and here's where things get more interesting, then that is a win for them. They win the party's nomination. Because how this breaks down is this. We are a representative democracy, and that is representative in everything. This includes voting in primaries. You are not actually voting for a candidate. You are voting for who you want the delegates to vote for at the national convention. So, you know, with Iowa, okay, Bernie got... The 2021, okay, so those 21 people that are the regular delegates, not the super delegates.
Yeah.
That the regular delegates are going to go to the national convention and be like, all right, yeah, we're throwing in our 22 for Bernie. Cool. Super delegates are their own kit and caboodle.
Now, something interesting that I found out was that only Democrats have superdelegates?
Yes and no, actually.
Oh?
The funny thing is, I learned, yeah, because I thought that too in going through research. The Democrats have superdelegates. The GOP has what are called unpledged delegates. It's basically the same thing.
Oh. I think that our superdelegates actually have to wear capes.
I would love that. That would make a lot more sense because they're kind of – they're not exactly obfuscated as to who they are.
No.
But
yeah.
It's not exactly made well known either. It's just the superdelegates or the unpledged delegates tend to be current or former party leaders or elected officials.
Yeah, the big wigs, the movers and the shakers. Yeah. The ones that can be coerced in one way or another to vote along what the party feels its best interest is, basically whatever Debbie Wasserman Schultz wants them to do.
Beyond that, the superdelegates have a power that the delegates themselves do not have. The delegates typically have to go along with whatever their state said. If they're a one and done, as in first pass the goal and they take it all, then all those delegates are voting for whoever the state said they vote for. Mm-hmm. If it's a split like it was in Iowa and they allow that, then okay, these delegates are going to vote for this person, these delegates are going to vote for this person.
So
these superdelegates have the ability to – they can say they're voting for whoever the hell they want. It does not matter. Until their vote is actually cast, they can change their mind and do whatever they want. They are not beholden to anybody as far as who they vote for.
Well, mm-hmm. and just to be clear, the regular delegates aren't technically beholden either. They just won't be delegates anymore if they don't go with the majority.
True. Being a delegate actually there is some honor and it gives some transition and upper mobility in the party or other functions. So you don't necessarily want to back out on that or double cross that. But superdelegate, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it is possible for some states to – they don't have, you know, the binding contract basically where they have to do it. So even those delegates have a little bit more flexibility. But now from what I'm hearing all over the place, you know, the number could be 10 to 20%, but mostly what I'm hearing is just 20%.
Yeah, 20% of
the total delegates are superdelegates.
Yes, 20% of all delegates, and this is across both the GOP and the Democratic parties, are classified as, I'm just going to use the one blanket term for all of them, superdelegates.
Yeah. And so on the terms of the Democratic side, that's roughly 810.
Out of the 4,000, yes.
Yep.
That's a big chunk.
And last time,
that can be guided.
That can choose anything they want.
For 383 of them.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Last I had checked the numbers, Hillary had gotten pledges from 383 of them.
Oof. So how did she get pledges from 383 of them without going through this primary process?
Follow the money.
Because again, superdelegates can do whatever the hell they want.
And
they're independent of the whole thing.
And that is that. So
now, are the other 383, so that leaves essentially 730 of them that are still available. Have any of them pledged to Bernie, or are they just still open game?
Last I checked, he had all of, I think, 20 superdelegates.
Oh, I'm sorry, 530, not 730. I did too many.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, even the 730 still leaves 1,700 that Hillary needs.
Mm. So Bernie's sitting at about 40 right now, because even though a superdelegate can vote for whoever they damn well please, that's their power. There's still one vote. There's still one delegate.
If the superdelegates, even those 300 or so that she has, they could just change their mind.
They could.
Yes.
They could,
yes, they can.
Yeah, those. But, I mean, once you have the pledge, I think that's pretty solid. Usually.
Yeah, usually. It's not going to change.
I don't think anything in politics
is solid. So what we have right now as we're going into New Hampshire is Hillary is roughly 405 delegates, if we include those that have pledged, and Bernie's at 40. So we have a decimal point difference between the two of them right now. So that's good to know, but it's still very, very early. And this is all about the same kind of momentum that Bernie has been generating with his grassroots campaign and the revolution. I wish that he wouldn't call it a revolution because that worked so well for Rand Paul and And Ron Paul, specifically.
He's also kind of, I don't want to, pandering's not the right word, but he's also kind of going towards a different crowd.
He's very much going to the disenfranchised and the young.
So the word is taken differently, I think.
It is a bit, yeah.
Depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, for those of us that have already watched, you know, we have the memory of seeing Ron Paul flounder.
Well, he was an internet darling.
He was an internet darling.
And everybody loved him, and everybody was behind him, but nobody showed up to support him. And I think that's a huge difference between him and Bernie, is that people are showing up to support Bernie. Either they learn from their mistake of, we love this guy, let's see him do something, oh, nobody showed up, crap, or they clearly love Bernie that much more.
Yeah, I remember.
Hard to say.
I remember the whole Ron Paul thing and how he was an internet sensation. I also remember it being a huge fucking joke. Like,
which is the case
People did it literally because it was Teenage Rebellion.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say. That could be the case because he was an internet darling on Reddit. And where you're an internet darling on Reddit, it's not necessarily among those who can vote. It might be a bunch of douchebag teenagers who are like, hey, that looks kind of popular. Let me post this up. I'm going to vote that up.
That was exactly what it was. I remember that crap.
It was interesting.
So when those people didn't show up to vote, it was because they weren't able to vote.
Yeah.
Now they're all old enough and they're like, hey, we should totally go vote for this Bernie guy.
We should actually do this thing.
Yeah, it is much more substantive. You know, they're showing up, like in Iowa.
And I think
in the middle of nowhere.
I think, Andy,
in the cold.
Probably the most important word, which is momentum. And momentum has derailed Hillary in the past, specifically when she was going up against the current president. Momentum torched her because she lost it, he gained it, and he never gave it up.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm being cautiously optimistic, going, yeah, we saw wonderful numbers when it came to Iowa. I love the numbers we're seeing. I know for a fact we're going to see good numbers when it comes to New Hampshire because that's his neck of the woods. I'm waiting for some of the actual big delegate number states.
Like South Carolina?
And see the numbers that flow toward him then, and see if this movement can maintain. Because unfortunately, as much as the youth vote is needed in this case, and as much as it will actually swing the campaign entirely in his favor, the youth are either being disenfranchised, unable to vote, and or lazy. I hate to say it, but it's true. They just won't go out there and do it. They think, you know,
it's not their job.
Facebook is all they need.
Yeah, it's just not their
job.
It's
apathy.
There's a lot of that. Now, just to give an idea for the kind of momentum that we're talking about. Last year at this time, in Iowa, the poll numbers were thus. Hillary Clinton had 68%. Bernie had 7.
He got better.
He got better.
Understatement of the show.
He got better.
No, I just heard the Monty Python reference there.
I got better. I turned That's into a brilliant. Newt.
They turned me into a newt.
Bernie turned me into a newt.
I got better.
A newt.
I got better.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. So from there to 50-50, you know, he ran her down. That's basically what it came down to.
Like a wild-haired Jew is wont to do in the wild.
Wow. How many times have you seen Hillary Clinton sprint off of an escalator?
Right?
Never.
I've also never seen her stop a press conference to tend to a fallen man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big humanity moment. Big humanity moment. That really touched me. Especially when you've got, on the other side of the coin, Donald Trump throwing people out into the cold, or when, you know, stripping them of their coats.
There was the Don't Tase Me, Bro with Kerry, where he bungled that.
Yeah. And just recently, Trump is getting into a bit of hot water when he told his fans, because really, they're not voters. They're fans.
They're fans.
He told his fans to beat the protesters up and that he would pay their legal fees. Yeah, on mic. on video. This is not a political candidate. This is a fascist.
Yes. Yeah.
Trump is running the zero fucks campaign.
Jack booted thugs.
Yeah.
Another comparison to our old friend Adolf.
It's just it's mind numbing that people actually are willing to support him. That they will actually speak the words, "I'm voting for Trump."
They actively like him.
And it's because he's that's just scary. I think you guys have said this before. It's because he's saying what they already feel. He's putting a voice to their bigoted opinions.
Take it. It's one step further. He's saying what they already feel, but they believe they're not allowed to say mm-hmm. because you're not allowed to say that.
He is legitimizing their bigotry.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's dangerous in and of itself.
Yeah, very.
So, okay. So delegates.
Just to add to that,
we need a lot of them.
What I have said before about Trump is he's letting us know who among our friends have secretly been awful, awful people.
Awful people.
Some of them not so secret, but yeah.
Some of them not so secret, but others, I've been surprised.
It is outing others, yes.
Oh.
I saw a meme that was rather representative of this, you know, because you can't fly the rebel flag on the back of your truck anymore, but you can get some Trump bumper stickers. So when you absolutely have to show your neighbors exactly what you think, at least you have that option.
Absolutely have to show that racist's pride.
Yep, you have an opportunity, and his name is Trump. So the differences are amazing. Absolutely amazing. Stark contrast. I can't think why anyone would vote Republican.
Well, I can't think of any reason why people would think that way in this day and age.
A thought occurs to me. They don't know what they're asking for. They have not really thought it through to the consequences of this action.
Well, these people don't live in reality.
That, well, yeah, there's definitely that. There's definitely that. There's a lot of delusional thinking.
Pseudo-altered reality that has been spoon-fed to them from the time they were young, mm-hmm. that these are the principles that will make us great.
Yeah.
And it's you know
and coming from one of these hyper conservative, hardcore Bible thumping families, I can tell you exactly how this indoctrination works, because it's all a lie. They don't actually tell you when you're growing up the principles that you're standing for, what they actually mean. They have great little rhetorics, telling a kid, you know, you've got a job and you make your allowance on that job. And so now I'm gonna take your money and give it to your neighbor because she doesn't have a job, so she doesn't have anything. And they say, well, that's not fair. And they say, welcome to the Republican Party. And mm-hmm. it's these gross oversimplifications of how, you know, politics and the economy and, you know, basic human decency work that they shove down your throats when you're not old enough to understand it. So they get you parroting those party lines early.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they destroy the education system so you never learn politics or economics or how any of that stuff works.
Or if the indoctrination's gone deep enough, you reject it.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, you don't even ask
but
why.
That's exactly how it works. And then when you're finally old enough to get out in the world and start doing your own research and finding out how ridiculous this all is, they threaten to shun you.
But not everybody changes. I mean, not everybody sees
because some people are just bad people. Some people never think for themselves. Sure.
You know, that's a very true statement, Mike.
But there are also huge chunks of people who never change because they're afraid of getting shunned by their family, because the number one message in these ultra conservative, hyper Christian households is family is sacred. Family is everything, which makes no sense, because I don't know about you all, but I certainly have family members who are terrible, terrible people, and I don't understand why I should respect them more than the people who actually treat me well just because they won some kind of genetic lottery and happen to be related to me. But they clinch on that. They clinch on these things that are not in your control.
Right.
It's that, and I've listened to enough stump speeches and enough candidate, you know, praising speeches from the GOP over my, unfortunately, large number of years, to be able to say I've heard the same thing over and over and over again. And it's the whole idea of, look, the Democrats are going to take your money so they can give away all these free things to these people, but don't worry, we're going to cut taxes, you can keep all your money, and then you can still have all those things without having to pay for it, basically.
Yeah, they don't take it to the next level of, okay, this is actually how this works.
That's yeah. where there's, all they're teaching.
There's no explanation of how all this works.
But there's no explanation necessary.
Yeah, this is the
that's
way
why
it
we
is,
elected you.
Yeah,
you're the one that's going to take care of us.
That's the whole thing is vote for me, I'll think for you.
Yeah. Yep.
Sheeple.
The thinking is done. Yeah, so that's definitely not. Yep.
These are the policies that we support, and these are the ones that, you know, these are the things that we hammer. Yes. And what Katie just said, the church will take care of you. It's the same exact mentality of listening to a guy talk from a soapbox and believe every single thing that he says without a second thought. Do not question the authority that is speaking from behind the podium.
Yeah, and if you do, you lose everything.
Well, then you're kicked out
yeah.
in the cold without your
you're
coat.
You're ostracized, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You have yeah. your family, you have nothing left.
Yeah, and they're demonstrating that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're demonstrating that every time. Now here in our world, you know, we're trying to educate. We're trying to let everyone know how things work so that
this
you can be informed.
Specials.
Yeah.
And Katie says hello to the podcat.
Hello, podcat.
Yeah. Yeah, Sprocket is finally allowed to be back on my lap. He ripped up my finger earlier, so I'm a little mad at him. But he's just so lovable, I can't really help. Okay.
He doesn't really give you a choice.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, he just kind of, yeah, no.
Yep. Is it okay. something like,
love me, love me?
Yeah, that's kind of what his purrs say. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he says.
Yeah, and his headbutts.
Mm-hmm, his headbutts and everything
my
else.
My husky movie narrator voice. In a world where a cat will not take no for an answer for pets.
One man, one podcast can make a difference. Whoa, hey, get down. Anyway. Okay. So with New Hampshire. Well, hey, ow. Okay. I'm trying to pull my headset off. Okay.
He has vetoed your New Hampshire.
He apparently has.
He lost your headset.
He apparently has. Okay. So with New Hampshire coming up, is there anything that we need to be on the lookout for? Because we just had, I guess, the last debate.
At this point, the only thing that would be a surprise for me, given, again, we saw the poll numbers going into Iowa and saw how those were absolutely wrong.
They were, yeah.
The only thing to keep an eye out for is if that kind of shift happens again when it comes to New Hampshire. I truly don't think it will. I think Bernie is going to sweep that state without a problem. But again, this is politics. Things can change.
Is New Hampshire an all or nothing?
New Hampshire is an all or nothing state.
Okay, so if he even gets 51%, he's got the state.
Yep,
all the delegates,
all of them.
So,
let's go Bernie.
Yeah, let's go Bernie. Let's see how he does. It should be very interesting polling numbers right now, or at least at the time of Iowa, he was 20 points ahead. Or at least, you know, perspective on 20 points ahead going into New Hampshire. Let's see where it happens with that. I'm not sure if it's gone up or down. I haven't seen the numbers. But there's talk on every side. You know, all you have to do is tune into the right news media and you'll see what you want to see. That seems to be the way it is.
It just depends on what you want to see.
Yeah, it just depends on what you want to see. Nate Silver over at 538 is, I think they're still proclaiming that it's probably going to be Hillary that's going to get it over and over and over again, and that Bernie really, really needs New Hampshire, and he needs to take it all. Like, okay, well, he just needs to take 51%.
I keep seeing all those polls that say, you know, Hillary's going to win, Hillary's going to win, Bernie's not going to win. I'm going, guys, the votes aren't in yet.
Yeah.
I don't care. You're stepping into my category. You're stepping into the category of a social scientist. Yeah, hard science is wonderful. Hard science goes out the window when a human factor is now involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can predict trends in sociology. You cannot predict outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And no battle plan survives contact with the enemy.
Nope.
Or reality.
Yeah.
You mentioned the 538, and I know we talked about that with, mm-hmm. like, electoral votes and then the 270 and all that.
Yeah.
I just have a quick question, and I know that the census comes every 10 years, and that's where that number is based off of, but why hasn't that changed since, you know, 2000? Like, have we not gone up enough in census numbers to change the number of electoral representatives?
I don't know when it was different.
Well, because I know that the 2000 election was still based off of a number of 270 electoral college votes to win.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the two.
Electoral representatives actually hasn't changed in quite a while. In a future one, I'll actually have all the numbers as far as when all this occurred and everything else. But no, it's actually the numbers themselves don't actually change. It's how they are distributed among the states. Changes.
Oh, wait, so it's all... No. Well, it did change when they voted in to have the District of Columbia become a voting institution. And
yes.
Then it ended up with the barest minimum, which was three.
The three that everyone gets added on to whatever they have. That's
right.
Why some states have four and some states have...
Right. And because of that, some states have less
right.
than others. Like, Florida has four less than our population actually dictates.
Mm-hmm.
Because of ones that are going towards other states to balance
yeah.
them out?
Yes.
Okay.
Because some states only have a population that would rate one.
So is that...
But they have to have three.
That's what Stephen is talking about by how they're delegated towards
yeah.
each state?
Yeah, that's the balancing act.
Okay.
So
I was just curious about that because I had read, you know, going back to at least the 2000 election, the number was 270,
mm-hmm.
knowing that we had a census in 2000, knowing that we had a census in 2010, why those numbers hadn't changed if they were going to.
Let's see.
It just seems like somewhere along the way, someone picked an arbitrary number and said, this is all the country ever gets unless we add a new state.
Well, it's not really that far off.
No, it's probably pretty true.
I mean, so...
Otherwise, why register a domain name like the 538? Because you might have to change it in 10 years.
That's kind of... Well, 10 years is a good run for a website. That's just fine. So if you're doing that at the census, that's fine.
But if you're a political website, that's something that kind of doesn't go away. So
yeah.
Maybe you should get more than 10 years out of your run.
Now, 538 is derived from the number of representatives in the House and the number of representatives in the Senate.
And the three.
And the three from Washington, D.C.
Yes.
From the District of Columbia. So if there ended up being more representatives in the House or more representatives in the Senate, which they can't because it's only two per state.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that number won't change. It'll just be
so it would have to be a very significant change in the House representation to change the number of actual electoral votes.
So,
yes, so yes, it could,
it doesn't change much.
So we
it
need
could
to
change.
Understand more, or at least myself, I need to understand more how they're determining the representation in the House based upon
yeah.
population.
Yes. So that's, if we discover that, that's how we can determine, you know, how many they would have to change. But then, of course, they're still balanced out.
Right.
You know, they're balanced around. So you get that number, and then you have to distribute them. And each state starts with three. And then they're divided based on some new math politic, you know, differential
actually,
system of equations or something,
you know,
I don't know.
Actually, the House of Representatives has been set at 435 since 1913.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
So we need Puerto Rico. We need a 51st state.
Yeah, it's based. It's literally based off of, okay, the United States population is X. We know that from the census. And it's
mm-hmm.
the, okay, how is that population distributed among each state? That's how you figure out how many representatives are for each state, but it doesn't change how many seats and thus how many electoral votes each one gets. As far as, you know, you're not going to suddenly have 500 plus the 100 plus the 3. It's going to be what it is.
Hmm.
I will go more in depth in this later on, I promise you.
Okay.
Especially as we get closer to the actual election.
Yeah, I'm curious about this. Okay, so how do we get more seats in Congress?
More states. That'd be the easiest way to do it. In truth.
It's funny. That's the easy way.
So when
splits into two states, that would do it.
Not even Florida, Texas.
We actually got Puerto Rico as a state,
yeah,
or any of the other territories, which honestly at this point should be states, so they could have proper representation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but except that they don't want it, or at least Puerto Rico doesn't want it because they actually
vote it down every time.
Less.
Yeah.
They pay less as a territory.
But they can at least Puerto Rico, they can vote in the presidential election.
Yes, they can.
But what was it, the Marshall Islands or something?
Marshall Islands, Guam, a few other places, yeah.
They can't. They don't have any representation. That's just screwed up.
We'll also go at some point in the screwed up thing about what D.C.'s finagle is.
Yeah, District of Columbia.
That later.
Yeah. More cocaine. That's what we need there.
Dr. Raxo.
That's
cocaine.
Yeah. DC's fun.
Okay. Ben Carson actually told me that the Washington Monument is just a cocaine silo.
Well, the pyramids were for storing grain.
The pyramids were for storing cocaine, obviously. Yeah. It's in rocks. It's in the rocks. So that's why you didn't find any open areas, because the open areas were just what they used already.
The cap is the only part that hasn't been snorted.
Yeah, there you go.
Nobody can climb that high.
That's why the Sphinx has no nose anymore. It's burned completely through.
Wow. Lord. You know, that makes sense. And that's wrong.
That's super wrong.
That's so super wrong. Okay,
I'm sorry. Sphinx lives matter. Sphinx lives matter.
Nice.
The Sphinx was a cautionary tale. Don't be a burnout.
Nice. Now, real quick, there's just a couple other things that I wanted to talk about, and then we'll get to our picks and wrap it up and send everybody to bed. Now, on the Rachel Maddow show, it was not just there. It was kind of became public knowledge. But you know the whole deal with Hillary's emails on her private server.
Oh, God.
As Secretary of State.
Maybe they should have like a...
Hold on. Now, it's a big deal because she's running for president and all, and she's a Democrat. Yeah, that's the only reason it's actually a big deal. It's the only reason that they've even said that they're making a big deal out of it. Especially when Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell, both former Secretaries of State, both had their own private email server. This is just the way it was done. So, and...
Meh.
Yeah. So, let it go.
Non-issue.
It is a non-issue. Sure.
Let it go.
But see, this is another thing that the GOP does. They have the memory of a goldfish, or they want you to have the memory of a goldfish.
Well, it's inconvenient for them.
Anything that they did is somehow not relevant.
Yeah.
Lest we forget.
But only when they're involved.
Lest we forget, the whole reason this came to light in the first place was because of the Benghazi investigation, which the entire GOP has stopped referencing.
Yeah.
Which tells me that they're just looking for a national holiday to release the results that we now have 8 investigations which have cleared her name.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
including 3 or 4 by the Republican Party itself.
So, more of a non-issue, but feel free and bring that up the next time that your Republican relative brings up Hillary's emails. And just mention, well, you know, Colin Powell had his own email server, too. And just watch the blood drain from their face as they move on, stumble to the next topic.
And Condoleezza Rice had her own email server, too.
Yep.
And the Republican National Committee had its own email server that they funneled emails through the entirety of Clinton's administration and Bush's administration, including emails going to and from the Senate Committee, the Senate Select Intelligence Committee. So top of the top secret food chain.
Mm-hmm. But you know, to be honest,
private email server.
But to be honest, most of them were forwards from Nigerian princesses. So it's okay, you know. So it doesn't really matter, you know. So no big deal. That was the state of the internet, you know. It was all chain letters.
I thank, sir, for thine time.
And let's see, Verizon Mobile, what is going on here? This was not mine.
Oh, I put this one in here.
Verizon's mobile video won't count against data caps, but Netflix does. Hey, wait a second. So they're zero rating other things, their own service. They're zero rating their own service, which is when they don't charge you for the bandwidth for their own stuff, but they are going to charge you for Netflix.
This sounds awfully familiar to what they kind of wanted to do with the high-speed lane and the low-speed lane on the internet.
Prioritize traffic. Yeah, yeah. We know a bit about this.
Here's my product, which I will offer to you for free, versus the other product, which you will not get for free.
Yeah. Now, I learned something about the program that T-Mobile has, which is called Binge On. Mm-hmm. Binge On, what they say is that it's to give their users, all the things that they want and all that. And that they have servers for Netflix and things like that, in-house. So it doesn't affect their carrier fees, inter-carrier backbone, transit stuff. All well and good. They're saving money there. The real reason that they're doing it is to manage their bandwidth. Obviously, that makes perfect sense, because what they're doing is they're throttling the bandwidth to 1.3 megabits for your connections on video. All video. Any video that comes in. Not just the streaming media from Netflix or YouTube or anything like that. Even carriers that don't have automatic downgrading systems that will then give you the right size video. So then it will jitter and jitter and jitter until you select something that's of a lower quality, and then it'll work. So they downrated every video, all streaming content.
Well, I have T-Mobile, and I think part of the reason why they did that in particular, I think, is because they actually have it where any of your binge-watching stuff does not count against your data.
Right.
So if they...
But that's it. They did all of it.
All of it, yeah.
But they didn't give you all the bits. They throttled it. It's not it's not an agreement that they have with those people. They simply capped the video at a certain bandwidth, which then forces the carrier, because Netflix will auto negotiate a connection and say, "Oh, your connection's not so good. I'll go ahead and downgrade that to the lower level." It basically means that you only get 480p, which is old TV resolution. That's it. So you got this nice phone in front of you that'll do 4K for no reason at all, and you're getting 480p television resolution. But really, that's what we've come to expect, and it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, it's not that big. I mean, you're watching on this little portable
It doesn't thing. Make any difference, but it's disingenuous.
Well, yeah.
It's very disingenuous and misleading.
The point is that it's a really shady business practice because you think you're paying for this ultra-high-def stuff, and you're not.
No.
Yeah. So I just wanted to point that out, that this is the state of the industry. They've got lots in this country.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah. Well, in other countries, they have other problems, like their country's smaller than some of our states.
Yep.
So then they have to, trying to get the right signal across all of Europe is kind of a problem. So they've got their own set of issues. We're just dealing with the issues here in the United States, and the big carriers are not necessarily playing nice with your data. And that's a problem, especially Verizon. Verizon's notorious for it. Comcast is notorious for it. We can go
Verizon
on and on for that.
Has somehow made it to where you cannot buy an unlocked phone and get it to work on their network.
Yeah, they just break it. You have to buy their phone, even though you are allowed to do it. It never works. Yeah. They've just made it to not work.
They're going the Apple route of whenever you connect to their network, they download an update that turns your phone into a brick.
Yeah, which is completely illegal. They're not allowed to do that.
It's completely illegal, but good luck catching them.
Yeah, pretty much.
However,
Verizon is in fact making it so you can place phone calls in Minecraft.
Wait, what?
Yes, they've actually made it so you can actually make phone calls in Minecraft and video calls in Minecraft.
Verizon?
Yes. I'll bring it up for next week.
Okay, yeah.
Wow.
Because that... Why? All right. That's okay. Well, yeah.
Maybe you wanted to connect your Minecraft sessions together?
Do you have to build your own phone booth first inside the game?
Actually, you build basically a cell tower in the game and then project the phone. And I watched a guy order pizza from the local pizza restaurant to be delivered through Minecraft.
Okay.
Wow.
We'll definitely have to talk about that next time. Okay.
You need to be careful with that, especially because as much as your eldest daughter loves Minecraft, you're going to get all kinds of crap delivered to your house.
Maybe. Maybe.
I've seen what she can build in that game.
Yeah. But it's okay.
The bar
it's okay.
Has definitely been raised.
It's local servers for me. I know what she does.
Yeah. She's not allowed outside the house.
No. Walled garden, buddy. Walled garden. It's fine. No worries. No worries.
She's
private servers.
Smart for her.
Wow. Yeah.
Also, in the news this week that bears note, John Kerry was, our Secretary of State, was almost beaten up very severely in Rome for, quote, fostering the expansion of ISIS. I'm just going to leave that in the notes. Go take a look. It's really an interesting kind of situation. These are the global politics that we have to deal with. And Secretary of State is not an easy job, no matter what anyone says. It's pretty ugly.
It goes back to our foreign policy, which sucks, frankly, and has sucked for a long time. Mm-hmm. ISIS is using mostly American military equipment.
Yeah.
Because we armed them. Back when they were something else.
Yeah, we armed and trained them when they were some other rebel group that we were supporting at that moment in time to overthrow a regime we didn't like.
Well,
and
also,
just like the last group who became the regime that we wanted to overthrow.
All right, so we'll take this all the way back to Reagan. You can't beat up a dead guy, so we might as well beat up the new Secretary of State.
I suppose we could do that. Yeah, okay. Steven, you got stomped on there. I didn't hear what you said.
No, yeah, the idea of ISIS, or as I like to call them, prefer to call them Daesh, actually using all U.S. military equipment. Well, yeah, a lot of that, you have to remember at this point, was practically given to them by the Iraqi army. Because the Iraqi army saw them coming and went, screw this, jumped off their stuff and fled.
Well, that's exactly what happened the last time.
Well, it was more to it.
Hussein was using American weapons because we funded Hussein to get rid of whoever was there before him.
We've done a lot of bad nation building.
One of my buddies is a military vet who was in Iraq for a long time, and he was talking about, one of the first things we did after we sacked the country was we disbanded the army. Well, the army that was disbanded went into Syria and then became ISIS.
Yep.
So this is the Iraqi army coming home is more or less what ISIS is to some extent.
Yeah, that's negative. Okay, so, hey, entertainment reviews and picks so that we can get out of here. I got one. I heard about this from one of the newer podcasts that I'm listening to, and they're called Noisy Person Cards. Now, for those of you in the game realm, that would translate to NPC, non-player character as well. So, Noisy Person Cards, it's a party game designed to help you develop character voices.
Ooh.
Sounds like it. Fine.
Yeah, it's based on, like, apples to apples and utter nonsense and things like that. So you get, like, a character idea, a concept, and like, an accent, and you have to do that voice.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
That could be interesting.
It should be very interesting. It can be anywhere from 15 minutes to infinite hours of fun for 3 to 10 people and ages 8 and up, or so it says. I don't know. I'd start them early.
I know.
But it might be interesting. So I think I'll get that, and then I'll let you know how it goes. Okay, Fred, you're next up.
Yes, I'm going to stay in the realm of geekdom, but I'm also going to stay in the realm of geekdom with social conscience. Deadpool is coming out next week, and Ryan Reynolds donned, I'm going to assume, his stolen Deadpool costume to film two PSAs, one for men, one for women. The one for men involved checking your testicles for testicular cancer. The one for women involved checking your breasts for breast cancer. Fantastic videos, entertaining, hilarious, amazing. Links are in the show notes to the YouTube videos. Worth your time. Before you go see the Deadpool movie, watch these videos. Ryan Reynolds is doing this character right.
You're getting it wrong. Ryan Reynolds isn't doing the character. Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool.
That is very true. There is nobody that could better play this character. He was born to be Deadpool. The only difference between him and Deadpool is Ryan Reynolds was not burned horrifically. Like
he doesn't have a healing factor.
Yes.
Yeah. Like,
that's the only difference.
Ultra cancer.
Ultra cancer.
I mean, that's the reason why Deadpool's so ugly. Actually.
Oh.
He was He was a healing factor baby for 30 seconds.
The healing factor made it so he couldn't die, but it also made his cancer run rampant.
Right, so it's constantly like evolving to meet the healing factor, and that's why he looks like burnt hamburger.
Oh. Okay. That makes complete sense. All right. David, what's yours?
All right. So
I don't like yours. That doesn't look good.
Class to do... This is basically a diet and exercise type of thing, 10-week kind of course. And it's actually pretty cool. So I'm going to recommend, you know, if you're looking to, you know, there's a lot of people out there with New Year's resolutions. It's now February, so you have spent 10 days in the gym and 20 days not utilizing your gym membership. this is probably a better alternative because there's accountability involved and there's It's a community atmosphere.
Did you put a link, David?
I did. I didn't put a link to what we're doing because everywhere.
But, okay. I'm just looking. It's like
the same thing. Why does it say diet and exercise and then doom.com?
Yeah, it's like the link is doom. It's like what's going on here?
Doom.
I'm plugging. Doom's coming out later this year and this brings me back to where I started, really, with first-person shooters. Not really. Wolfenstein 3D was my start, but Doom is where it really took off.
Hell yeah.
For the population at large. And the new game looks so legit.
Seems legit.
See,
well, it looks like they learned their lesson from Doom 3. It's not scary just because you can't see anything.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Well, it's also, you know, not ridiculously hard for no reason. It is
it's exactly the right amount of ridiculously hard.
It's the right amount of hard, but it is really you are a demon slaughtering machine.
Yes.
That is you are the anti-demon demigod, and you stomp demons like mad, and you saw them apart with chainsaws, and you explode them with rockets, and you,
you know,
just
like
destroy
you do.
Them with shotgun blasts. And it is all kinds of stress relief for me.
That's the way to
just
go.
Just to watch the videos, and I'm so psyched to play the game.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. So, with the diet and exercise, so you're going to have to play the game on a treadmill.
No. Diet and the exercise is, so what we're part of is a thing called, it's Ferrell's Extreme Body Shaping.
Okay.
And it's interesting. It's 3 days a week is kickboxing, and then 3 days a week is strength training with resistance bands. And I was thinking, resistance bands, that won't be so bad. God, that's the worst. I will kick that bag all day, every day, not to have to do resistance bands. Oh, huh. My God.
I did not know.
Oh.
Well, okay, the more you know, I guess.
The more you know. Yeah, it was humbling, dude. It's like, I can't believe I'm on the lowest band and I can't do this thing.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. Pixar didn't happen. Anyway. Okay, so Mike.
Actually, I do have a little something.
A little something.
Let me see if I can remember what this is called. believe it is the level A.
Level A?
Yeah, I got this for Christmas, and I can't find the box. Oh, wait. No, it may be over here.
Okay, well, level A.
Aha! Here it is. Actually, it's level U. It is a Bluetooth headset.
Okay.
That was like $20.
Huh.
And it is the Samsung level U. It's one of those headsets with the earbuds that have the magnetic bit at the end so they clip together. And it just goes around and stays in place magnificently.
Hmm.
Like, I go work out in this thing, and I thought, because, you know, I go run long distances, and I am not kind to myself when I go work out, and I was not sure if this thing was going to stay on. But no, it stays on perfectly. The battery lasts for frickin' ever. I don't remember the last time I charged it. The sound quality is crystal clear. It is just a great little Bluetooth headset for all sorts of purposes. So.
Samsung U. Okay. I'm going to have to...
Samsung level U.
I need to write that down.
Going to have to find... Yeah. Especially if it's only $20. It's like, well, okay.
Yeah, we looked at one yesterday. Same setup that was like
No, it was $70.
Oh, $70.
Yeah, those are expensive. I've been looking at them, too.
They might have gotten it on sale, but it's definitely... It's not super expensive, because if it was on sale for $20, it couldn't have been that expensive. And it's really nice quality, so.
Well, alrighty.
Okay, nice. Well, according to the Amazon, you can get it for $34.99 with Prime shipping.
Nice.
Great, there you go.
Nice.
So that's not a bad thing, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Definitely
follow our link too, because yeah, you never know, it might give us a little bit of a kickback, which is always nice. Okay, there we go. All right, and Steven, you've got one.
Yeah, I've just recently come across this guy. I've seen him pop across my Facebook a couple of times, but he has a YouTube channel. His name is Jonathan Young. He does occasional little bits of original music, more like inspired music, but his main thing is doing covers, and he just does. Disney is one of his big things he's done, but he also does, besides like a pop funk covers of various songs, he also changes things into more metal versions of songs, like actually taking Thriller and doing a whole music video with that, but doing it actually with like hardcore metal riffs.
He
also has done things like the Misty Mountain song from The Hobbit, and seeing that was more of a metal
Fire
flare.
On the Mountain?
Yes. That one too. The I Just Can't Wait to Be King from Lion King. It's amazing music. I'm a fan of cover music.
Power metal from the Power Rangers?
I know. I'm sad about that. Yeah, he's done Power Rangers as well. That was actually good. One of my favorite ones he did recently was he actually did Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone.
Danger Zone!
Okay, where the
hell is that?
Where the hell is
that? So yeah, go ahead, go to YouTube, look up Jonathan Young, and I guarantee you'll have hours of music that is entirely beautiful, and you can also buy it all. He actually has it for sale.
Oh, okay.
Plus, all of his discography is accessible through Spotify.
Oh, nice.
Excellent. Okay. Oh, also, if I noticed that just recently in an update, because as you guys know, I'm trying to do the home automation stuff, and I have the Amazon Echo, and now it also integrates with Spotify premium accounts. So if you are a subscriber and have that, you can have all of your music from Spotify now on your Amazon Echo. So that would include Mr. Jonathan Young, which is always good. And let's see, we've got, you.
Me.
Ren.
Yes.
What
I've,
you got?
I've been addicted to this lovely little phone game. It's called Star Trek Timelines. It's very much for the Star Trek fan. It has every character in every universe sort of combined in one game, and you get to play them in missions. And
as Mike downloads it, like, right now.
For free.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I'm very excited to hear someone... It suggested to me because I started playing this Final Fantasy one because I'm a Final Fantasy nerd, and I thought, I kind of want to get this, but I don't know if it's any good because the last one was crap, but I'm glad someone has reviewed it for me.
I don't want to step on Ren's thing right now, but what Final Fantasy game are you talking about?
I love this show.
Oh God, it's called. It's here.
Write it down.
I'm working on it.
Oh boy. Okay. So, and you can find the Star Trek timelines out at disruptorbeam.com/game/Star Trek timelines with a hyphen in between them.
Yes. Also, iTunes, Google Play. I mean, it's on all platforms. Okay. It's a really good game. You definitely get a decent amount out of it for free. But I think you would get basically higher level characters if you put a little bit of money into it.
Probably.
But I think that's what those things.
I just found a $14 app that I have to buy. Final Fantasy Tactics War of the Lions is on Google Play.
Oh boy.
It's you know, Final Fantasy Tactics. It's awesome. I still have the original PlayStation disc, so I'm good.
I don't have the original PlayStation disc, but I did have it downloaded onto my laptop, so I have to re-download and set that whole mod up to play it back. Yeah, but the original is amazing. I've never played War of the Lions, but I've been told it's awesome, so I'm totally going to spend that $14 and put it on a phone.
Boom. Well, okay then. All right. I think that's. Do you have anything other to say about it? As you got stepped on horribly, I'm very sorry.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Not at all. No, it's just. Like I said, I've been hooked on it for a couple weeks now.
Okay.
And it's a really good game. You should check it out if you like Star Trek at all.
Is it, like, super, super addicting and you have to be in it, like, all the time?
No.
Oh, good.
Luckily, it's not like that. You can walk away from it. Some of the missions that you can do can take up to 3 hours, so you set it and forget it.
Okay.
It's the
Ronco Star Trek game.
Most of the Star Trek games are like that, actually.
Yeah,
you send away teams and you come back in 3 hours.
That's really why I like the game a lot, because you can walk away from it. You can do life a little bit, but still play the game. So
yeah, you know, go do the life thing.
Just a little.
Un poquito. Okay. All right. I think this Danger Zone cover really speaks to me.
Okay.
So
is it going to close the show?
Yes. Whoa, nice. All right. Where's my volume, though? Because I got to talk over Kenny Loggins.
Crank it.
That's it for us tonight. We'll be back next Friday at 9:30 Eastern. In the meantime, the conversation is continuing on the web. Head over to orrelyradio.com. That's orlyradio.com. For all the links right at the top of the page, and do watch us live and chat in the IRC. Hopefully I'll have that fixed next time. If you like what we do here, you can help keep the lights on. You can follow the Help Us link on the webpage. Actually, now it's the Donate link. And that'll one will take you over to Patreon. One will take you over to a donation page. Please. Give me some money. If that's too rich for you, contribute to the show with topic ideas, corrections, advertising offers, unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, and unsolicited advice by emailing them to us at orrelyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Leave a voicemail at 470-222-6759 and post and vote on stories on our subreddit. Leave us a glowing review on whatever platform you found us on. And, of course, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, Google+, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. We can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. Until next time, this has been Orrelly Radio, part of the Common Services Network. Music for the show was created by Kevin McLeod of Incomptech.com and by Jonathan Young. Power metal cover, Danger Zone.
send your emails. Get a poster. Help me out here, people.
Yes, send emails. And
send emails, acquire poster.
So I'll just go ahead and share this on my screen.
Okay, well, the broadcast has been successfully terminated.
It's in the can.
There you go. Done.
Look at my screen share.